Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Monday Night Magic, where we are talking about not just the big news, contrary to what my co-host would like to do.
What?
What?
That's not what we signed on for.
No, we have to talk about other stuff too, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Oh, you sound so pitiful.
Oh. I want to talk about the F&M promo.
No. So, yes, the big news happened, and we'll get to that eventually, but we're going to make you wait. I wasn't talking to you listeners, I was talking to my co-hosts. So I'm Chewy, the lead dork here. With me, as always, are these other guys who I can't call dorks because I'm on the wrong show's intro. So I'm Chewy, and I'm trying to maintain. And there's Clues over there. He's a judge. He's on card advantage.
Yep, I sure am. And I just want to let you know, listeners, that 4 out of 5 co-hosts this week remembered to unmute their mics.
Nice. Slow clap.
I don't get it.
It's funny because...
Keep introducing people. You'll get it.
Okay. That's Bill slash Squee slash Guy. I didn't have another slash. Over there, hey buddy.
Hi.
And then over there, he's the content... What are you, content editor? Yeah.
I'm the head Putin nanny of mtgbrodeals.com.
I don't know if that's a term that's allowed.
That is... No, you listen to me. That is my title, and I gave it to myself, so it's validated. Done.
Is this sort of like the trash man calling himself a custodial, or a janitor calling himself a custodial engineer?
Well, it
for Algernon.
It makes me feel slightly better about, like, the fact that I basically run the entire website now, and the only time that Jeebs ever does anything is when I'm like, hey, we're going to bring this person on. Is that okay with you? And he'll be like, yeah, sure. Why are you asking me? You're like, oh, okay. Well then, thank you, owner of the website who pays the bills, sir.
So he's the poobah, but you're the poot nanny.
Well, he's more like the sugar daddy, and I'm more like the highly attractive Dominican pool boy.
In every sense of the word.
And our 5th co-host, Steve! Thank you, Steve!
Damn it, Steve. You're forever forgetting to unmute your mic. Was this the joke?
Steve, I didn't. That was the joke. There are only 4 of us on this week.
That's why I was so confused.
That's why Chewy, I slow clapped for you.
Chewy, you can't get directions unless there's a person with lawnmowers in their car in front of you. And you don't get the joke. I'm so ashamed of you.
Yeah. I got to see Jack last week.
Yeah, but what was great about this, though, is because I'm literally in the middle of, like, bumcrap nowhere. Chewy got lost in the only intersection in the whole town, okay? I was, like, trying to guide him to where we were eating. And he was just like, there's a guy with like 3 or 4 lawnmowers in his truck. Why does he need that many lawnmowers? That's ridiculous. And I see this guy pass in front of the restaurant. And immediately I start going ape stanky. And I'm like, Chewy! 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 Turn left! Turn left, Chewy! Turn left! And those were the best directions I could give him. Because he was lost in a town that had we have 2 intersections. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just because I didn't get to the second one doesn't mean anything.
And I got Canadian candy out of that. So, I'm not dead. Thank you, Schofield.
Well,
wow,
it was actually Kim Ho, I think, is who...
Oh, well, thank you, Kim Ho. I'm not dead. I greatly appreciate it. But, dude, I know I'm a nerd, too, because I spent, like, 20 minutes just looking at the packaging on the Canadian candy. And I was like, ha-ha, they listed it in gram weight. Nerds. But they didn't taste like because they weren't.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I was happy with that. Did we lose Chewy?
Did you try the Smarties yet?
Yes, those were the first things
those
I tried.
So freaking weird.
That was the only reason I tried them, was because you said they were strange. And, like, Smarties, for those of you who are not Canadian listeners, they take, like, imagine the Smarties we have down here, the hard sugar candy. It's that coating over chocolate.
What?
Like, it's like an M&M, but instead of a thin candy shell, it's just paint.
Like, it's like
they forgot to put candy in the shell. It's just coloring. So you take a bite, and it's just chocolate. And you go,
yeah. And it's like getting ready and getting all excited for Christmas Day, and then accidentally finding out that you're Jewish. Like, that's how weird it is. It made so much sense after you sat down and really thought about it. Like, all the signs were there, but you still, it just, it comes as a shock.
Accidentally, you say.
Yeah.
All right, I'm pretty sure we're 10 minutes in.
I'm pretty sure that's not the case.
No, I'm and sorry, I, we're 10 I'm minutes into sure the call. We're only 5 minutes into the recording.
There we go. So let's get started.
Okay.
Okay, so there were tournaments this weekend.
Yep.
Kobe! One person got it, thank God.
Kobe!
Kobe!
So, GP Kobe was... This was the modern one, right? Yeah. Clues, how many people were there? You're the one that knows how to do that.
You know, I actually don't know. I haven't gotten that far yet. I didn't expect it to come up like this fast.
I thought we had a good... I'm so sorry Chewie and I were having more fun than you on the...
If you hadn't brought it up, the good clues, then yeah, we would still be on the candy. So,
what you're doing.
Okay, so, who won? I can't find... Scroll, you piece... Oh my god, my computer's such a stupid...
I don't know, but I'm Teruya Kakumai.
Okay. He found it before I did. Say it one more time, Bill.
Teruya Kakumai.
There we go. He won. But I'm having serious, like, latency issues here.
Yeah, the Magic website does that to people.
I don't know if it's the Magic website or my computer.
Hey guys, let's just put the search function when you're on Gatherer at the top. That'll make total sense. We'll make them roll to the very top.
Alright, what is he playing? He is playing, oh my god, are you kidding me? He was playing Robots or Affinity with Tarmogoyf. Oh,
that's been a thing for a couple of weeks. Yeah, that's totally not new.
With Goyf in it, really?
Yeah, like it's Goyf, and then the a lot of people sometimes substitute it with the common from Scars and Mirrodin, where it has the Metalcraft and gets like +4/+4 or something like that. And they run Goyf because Goyf is good, and boom, the robots in the face.
I still don't know though. What was that card that you didn't just name?
Something armor clad elf with Metalcraft that does a thing where you have three or more artifacts and it gets like +3 or +4 or something like that.
I got no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, I have not heard of it.
It's a common.
So do you guys want to mention the deck you actually used?
Yeah, let's do that instead of talking about theory crafting.
Oh, but God, it didn't click.
It was like 2,300 players.
Holy crap, really?
Yeah, they had to split.
Holy crap, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was wrong. That's not what the first place guy was playing. The crappy, either my crappy computer or the crappy Magic website. I'm actually going to lean towards my crappy computer this time. Did not actually click when I told it to. So he was playing Burn.
Yep.
Excellent.
And yeah, this is a hell of a Burn deck. Look at this. It's a standard modern Burn deck, but God, look at it. It's beautiful. Oh,
four main deck skull cracks. I love it.
Yeah. So I'm gonna run through this real quick. So he's got the full set of Goblin Guides, Vexing Devils, Eidolon of Great Revel, and 3 Grim Lavamancers. The full set of Rift Bolt, Lava Spike, Lightning Bolt, and Skullcrack, and then 3 Ancient Boros Charm, and what is that? Searing Blood and Shard Volley.
Yep.
I like this. And he's running 20 lands, only 4 of which are fetch lands. Nice.
It's like he's only running 2 colors or something.
As if that matters to modern players.
I know.
Oh, check out the sideboard. He's got 4 Molten Rains in the sideboard. That makes me so happy for reasons I'm not entirely sure of. Why does that make me happy?
Because boom.
That's a good reason. Okay. So sorry about the confusion. That is the winning deck here, which is very much something that Clues and I look at and go,
yeah, that's pretty accurate.
All right, so who did he beat? So I don't have to scroll.
The one you were just talking about.
Oh, you say Goto?
Goto. Yes.
Goto?
Yeah.
Okay, he was playing the robots with Goyf and in Soul Artifact, which is showing up a lot in Modern. In this deck, anyway, in Modern.
So you want to bet that Shatterstorm and the board of the winning deck mattered?
I bet it did, actually. I wouldn't bet money on it because
Shatterstorm and
money
Stunning
I have
Violence
is mine.
Pretty good, so.
Yeah.
Just board in 5 cards to trump your opponent's deck.
Yeah. I mean, that seems fun. Let's see. So who... Oh, I had to scroll down. Okay. So what about 3rd and 4th? What else was in the top 8? I don't even care about order anymore because it takes too long.
Yeah, if only these were in order.
That would be nice. Let's see here. There is Restoration Angel, Blades, Splicer, Vendilion Clit, Snapcaster Mage, Elspeth, Knight Errant. That's original Elspeth. Whoa.
She's really good, guys.
Yeah, no kidding. I just haven't seen her in a long time. I just found, I've got one in my crappy, like, white casual soldiers deck, and I went,
nice.
So he's playing, what is this deck? It's red, white, blue, it's a flash deck, right? That's what this is called?
Looks like, yeah. I mean, it's Resto Angel, Blade Splicer, beat, beat, beat.
And then a whole lot of spells. What?
And a lot of removal.
Can we call it Flashdance?
I mean, we are now.
I mean, it's either that or Flashbang, which might make more sense. But
yeah, but I think my way is funnier.
yeah, it's a choice between funnier or more accurate, so.
Well, we don't go for accuracy. This is not a podcast for accuracy.
That's fair, then.
Okay, and the other person in the top four was playing... What color is this? Red-green Tron, it looks like. Yep, there's Pyroclasm. Okay. Pretty standard red-green Tron deck. Do they usually play an Ulamog? They do, don't they?
May as well.
That's true, okay.
I mean, sometimes you need to blow stuff up. Sometimes you can only get to 11 mana and need to blow stuff up.
Why is he running three copies of Grove of the Burn Willows rather than some other red-green land that doesn't come into play tapped? Because obviously he can't run, Punishing Fire, because that's not legal.
Yeah, why is he doing that?
I don't know. I see no reason to, unless swag.
I'm having trouble finding a reason to.
Okay.
Is it in the sideboard?
No, it's a land. It's in the main. And there's,
oh, that's...
Yeah, I'm sorry. Awkward. The Grove of the Burnwell. I don't remember if I actually said that or not.
You did.
Okay. But I just don't
that's
see...
That's super awkward.
I just don't get it. I mean, maybe because it's unconditional dual land that comes into play tapped and doesn't hurt him? Or comes into play untapped, rather, and doesn't hurt him at all? Like, in any way, shape, or form? I mean, sure, yeah. It gives his opponent life, but this deck doesn't care.
I mean, what I was going to say, what else could he be running? He could be running a shock land, but a shock land's going to shock him to get it untapped.
All right.
And that's 2 points instead of a 1 point difference, right, if we do have to tap it for colored mana.
He could be running a pain land.
He could be running a pain land.
He could be running one of the buddy lands, or whatever they're called. Is that what they're called?
Yeah, I usually call them buddy lands, but he's only got two forests
exactly.
to help
yeah.
his buddy lands.
So maybe it's just one of the best options.
I'm going to go with he had foils.
Swag. Okay, so moving on, who else do we have? Come on. Really?
Yes.
Here we go.
Really?
Here's another red deck. This one's running Hellspark Elemental instead of the Grim Lavamancer and the...
Vexing Devil.
Oh, the Vexing Devil. Right. I like Hellspark Elemental. Let's go with Unearth, right? Yeah, he's two guys in one. He's awesome. You know what I mean.
I do know what you mean, yes, but it's amusing. Go on. I was just laughing at things.
Completely unrelated things, right?
That's right.
Let's see. There was a Splinter Twin deck. This looks like a standard blue-red Splinter Twin deck.
No, this is modern.
Yeah.
That was a terrible joke, and you should feel bad.
But Chewie didn't even get it. That's the problem.
It's because I don't listen to what I say. So,
well, you may have read it somewhere else, but you heard it here first, folks.
I said a standard blue-red Splinter Twin deck. You're like, no, it's modern, and it just went right over my head, because what did I say? Okay, so nothing special there. No Tarmo Twin, no... I don't see any other part of the deck. It's the standard modern Splinter Twin deck. Okay? That was Yuki Ichikawa. I don't think we've said any of these names.
We
Sorry
haven't. We're not good at pronouncing, English names, so...
I mean, I can pronounce Japanese names if you want to. You just keep jumping around, and it takes me a minute to figure out which deck you're on.
I'm just going down the list of the selected deck.
Okay.
From top to bottom. So now I'm on Takuya Yamada's... what is this? This is blue...
This is Tarmo Twin.
Tarmo Twin.
There's the Tarmogoyf.
Oh, enchantment is listed down here. Okay, here's the twin. Right. Is the setup here different for each of these? Creature, sorcery, instant, enchantment, land. If I go to the next one, will that be in a different place? Is that why I'm having problems?
I don't
they're
think
probably
they're
moving
always
because they
in
don't
a
have
different
planeswalkers.
Place.
I think they go in an order, and when there are planeswalkers, that bumps it off.
And when there aren't enchantments, then that is just not here. Okay, so there's my problem. And then Ken Sawada in...
Escape Shift.
With Escape Shift deck, yeah, nice and simple.
Hooray.
So is that all eight? That is all eight, right?
That is all eight.
And how many... Were there seven different deck types in the top eight?
Yeah, there were two Burns, there were two Splinter Twins, although one was Tarmo Twin, so I don't know if I'd count that as a completely different
archetype. So we'll call it 6.5 different.
Yeah, let's call it six. Okay. Still, six, not bad.
Right.
Six out of eight is good. Let's see, a computer. Clues, you want to talk about the top five cards?
I would love to talk about the top five cards!
That's, too bad.
That's good, because I can't find it.
Oh, it's a link at the top.
Well, I know where I can't get to it.
Oh, can't scroll up. All right, well, number five is Thoughtseize, because, it's kind of good. Just take it out of their hand. It'll be fine.
Wait a minute.
Number four.
Whoa.
Yes.
This says there were zero copies of Thoughtseize in the top eight.
Yes. Look, we've already established long ago that top five cards doesn't necessarily mean what you think it means.
No, I'm not surprised that it's here. I'm surprised that there were no Thought Seizes in the top eight. Wow. Okay. And according to this
there
right
was
up here...
Inquisition of Kozilek?
Well, no, that's just Shota Yasuoka, who was not in the top eight. So is this... according to this, it's a response to the decks that did well last week. Or at, you know what I mean. Boston, there we go, last month. So people played more Thought Seizes to counter those decks, which is why all these other decks did better this time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it was a metagame call.
Right. Okay, moving on then. Sorry. I was like, why is it here if it didn't make the top eight at all?
I can't look at that artwork anymore ever since I saw the altar where he's holding a bag of Arby's.
That was pretty funny.
I can't do it. Number four, Scape Shift. And we actually did see a Scape Shift deck in our top eight.
Yay. So.
There you go. Number three, Vendilion Click. Because nothing's better than untap, upkeep, draw. I have effects. V-click you. Number two, Ensoul Artifact. Because a 5/5 for two mana is pretty good. Particularly if you can, you know, stick it on an indestructible artifact land. Because I think we have that one, right? Modern allows the Darksteel Citadels. So.
Yeah, it's in standard.
That seems good. Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, all the other ones are banned.
Yeah, he means it wasn't banned in Modern.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And number one, which I totally want to talk about, is Vexing Devil, a card that I absolutely love, and I've loved since the day it was printed, and people told me I was a fool.
I don't think you're a fool. I completely disagree with the assessment that card is bad.
I think that you're a married man and you shouldn't love Vexing Devil.
Well, I mean, I love it like a brother.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. Bromance is cool.
Damn, because I was going to say, hey, Jen, if you're listening.
She doesn't listen to the show.
No.
Oh, who are you kidding? But no, Vexing Devil, you know, the claim has been, and they even make the claim here in the write-up, that the argument against Vexing Devil is because your opponent has the choice. They will always choose, you know, the one that you didn't want them to. But look, it's a rigged choice. It's a bad choice for them no matter what. Either this is like one of the most efficient burn spells to the face, or it's one of the most efficient red one drops ever.
Yeah.
Either way, that's good for you. And if they have to, if they choose creature and then remove it with a card right away, well, that's one more piece of removal they can't use on another creature. Because they have to deal with it.
Yeah, now if they have like a 0/5 wall sitting there when you cast it.
Yeah, it's not as good.
Well, every card has weaknesses.
Yeah. This card to me is honestly the epitome of red.
Okay, explain.
I'm sorry, I think you meant the epitome. Okay.
The epitome of red, excuse me, pronouncing things, you're silly. Right. Well, what I mean by that is...
You were right, you know, it's a
red. Yeah, alright, whatever. Red's biggest strength in the entire game comes not necessarily from burn or from, like, creating any kind of weird situations like Pandemonium or anything for your opponents. It comes from creating intense problems for the board state. That's actually where red excels best. And it does that by having this creature that's super hasty that has wither. It does it by having things like Vexing Devil. And to me, Vexing Devil is everything that is red. It's cheap. It is a card that people grossly underestimate in a deck that people grossly underestimate. And it is a card that is going to present a problem to the opponent where they have to make decision tree where, am I going to take a few swings from this? Am I going to kill it? Do I really want to waste the removal on it? Well, do if I take the 4 damage now, how's that going to affect my thoughts, these choices? Vexing Devil is everything that is red, period.
I just love using it with Brimstone Volley. That was my favorite play. It's so good. You just drop it on 4, and they're like, oh, well, I don't want to deal with that right now, so... They just let themselves take it, and then they take 5 more, and then they're, like, pretty much dead at that point. It's great. Or, hey, I got a cool creature. Let's go hit you for 4.
Yep.
And that's why Vexing Devil is awesome. But in this place, it's here because Eidolon of the Great Revel still makes red cards really, really good.
It sure does.
Because they're taking damage if they play anything that can deal with him.
Yay.
That's a top 5 card.
Top 5 card!
That is a top 5 card!
Took our gerbs.
Let's see. I've lost my... Top 5 card, there we go. So there was another GP.
There was.
This was in Sydney.
This one was upside down.
Yes, where everything wanted to kill it.
Well, if you look at the picture, It actually looks like they put Chandra goggles on the trophy, and he's just like, yeah.
So,
yes, it does.
Who won? Paul Jackson won. And this was, what, M15 Limited?
Hey, wait a minute. There's a small but non-zero chance that these decks are in order.
Okay.
Yeah, of course, the ones we're not going to look at.
Matthew Griffin in third, yes. And then Maitland Cameron in okay, at least through fourth, they are in order. This could be sheer coincidence. Hold on.
Okay, Chris Sparks.
In fifth?
Yep. Saito in sixth. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, Park Jun-young.
Yes.
And Don Vaughn. Oh, no, I'm not pronouncing that.
We're not pronouncing that, but he's totally in eighth. And the deck lists are in order. It is like a Christmas miracle.
Great. The one we don't want to talk about, the ones they put in order. Thanks a lot, Wizards.
Hey, Clues, in a throwback, I have to tell you that your Christmas miracle came right after you found out you were Jewish.
Because we just discovered this is limited, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, that's why we're not going to talk about it. Yeah.
Happy Hanukkah, buddy.
So there we go. Top five cards.
Top five cards. Oh, man. Okay, so now let's compare and contrast top five cards in M15 Limited to the top five cards in Modern. So, number five, Forge Devil. Would you rather have a 1/1 for one red that deals a damage to target creature and a damage to you? By the way, don't play this on an empty board.
Oops.
Would you rather have that or a Thoughtseize?
No, let's not do that. Let's just read the cards and let's go.
All right, fine. Number four.
The answer is always going to be the other ones.
Covenant of Blood, which deals four damage to target creature or player, and you gain four life, which seems pretty good, except that it costs seven mana. Number three, Siege Worm. Oh, that's true. It does have Convoke. Siege Worm has Convoke, too.
They're both good.
All around. Yeah, actually, the Siege Worm's pretty good. Number two, Coral Barrier. Coral Barrier, because it's a wall that brings a squid.
Yep. Yay, squids.
At number one, Raise the Alarm.
Blockers are good. Oh, well, those are better.
Yeah. Speaking of having two blockers, let's just Raise the Alarm. Two dudes, instant speed, perfect.
I have picked Raise the Alarm over a lot of seemingly better cards because it's so important to the white deck in this format.
Didn't they reprint the guy from Innistrad who untaps when a dude comes in? Or am I wrong about that?
No, he's here too.
Okay, yeah, so he goes well with Raise the Alarm as well.
Mostly you're doing it so you can drop Triplet Spirits stupid early and then destroy them. But.
Yeah.
I am still so disappointed the Booze Cube has not made a parody card called Raise the Roof that produced Frat Boy tokens.
Okay, then.
Deep thoughts with that? Jack LaCroix.
All right.
We know it, we're just not acknowledging it.
Oh, okay, well, thank you. I love you guys too.
Or something. I didn't actually hear any of that conversation, so.
And in more important news, if you go back to the page that we were just on, the actual event page, and you scroll down to the pictures, you can find out that Tomoharu Saito is here to kill you.
Yeah, he totally is.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, take a look.
All right, I'm headed there now. I'm a little worried.
He does it slowly there. Saito was, yeah, okay. Yeah, that joke made sense. Yay.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, he's
it's a real slow roll to the bottom of the page.
And it looks like Maitland Cameron is his prey, just from his pose.
I thought he was a dinosaur.
Which is what Garrick hunts.
Oh, so. or it could be a Thriller joke. There's all kinds of options here.
We
really need to go to these top eights. Seems like they're having fun.
Or something. Okay, so even more, Star City was in, where were they, D.C.?
D.C., yes. Although, I think they were probably right outside of D.C., but still.
All that really matters is they don't get a senator.
This is true.
I don't think that matters, but okay. So Standard, we've got
468 players for Standard.
Just what he said. Let's see, a black-blue devotion deck? What is this?
Boo devotion.
Well, it would be a devotion deck
with
black
Notion Thief.
Cards.
Like, is this black devotion with Notion Thief? Is that what this is?
There's two Notion Thiefs in the board, so sure.
And everything else is mono black in the main board, so yeah. Very much. Veil Specter does not count. Actually, everything else in the board except for the Negate and the Notion Thief is black.
Yep.
Okay. I just recently listened to, I think it was Card Advantage number 29, maybe? Might have been 28, where Clues and Rich were discussing Notion Thief, and Rich was all about it.
He was. I don't know that he ever really capitalized on that in actual play, but he really didn't. That card tickled him.
Yeah, and it's good that it's constantly in sideboards nowadays, just so he feels better. I mean, it's been for a while, but, you know.
Yeah.
Now it's showing up in places where it doesn't belong, like a mono black deck.
Well.
Let's see here.
Gotta that do was... fix the rev somehow.
Not for long, though.
Well, it's gonna go away with it, so.
Oh,
that's true, yeah.
Wait, they're both blue cards. Yay!
Yay! So that was Steve Rubin. Then we've got blue-white control, green-white aggro, a mono-black devotion deck, Rookie of the Year, Jared Butcher. Jund Walkers in fifth, red-white burn, another Jund Walker.
Yeah, how white is this red-white burn? Is this still just like Boros
Charm and Chain of the Rocks?
Yeah, and War Leader's Helix.
Yep, still got four.
Yep. There we go.
Boros Charm. Oh, there's no Chain to the Rock. Oh, in the board. Okay.
Sideboard. Yep.
Cool. This is the one running Phoenix and Pyromancer. Okay.
And some Nyx Fleece Rams in the board.
Well, yeah.
Bye.
Okay.
Exactly. So like I said, another Jund Walkers in seventh and Mono Black again in eighth. Ooh, there was also a Mono Red. What's the difference between Mono Red Aggro in ninth and Rabble Red in tenth?
I swear we had this conversation last week.
Did we?
I thought we did.
Yes,
somebody want to back me
yes,
up?
Yes, we did. Yes,
they're the same
did.
Deck. Are they? They're almost the same deck.
They look pretty close to me.
So this is just Star City being bad at naming things?
Well, Mono Red Aggro has
more Rabble Masters.
Has one fewer Rubble Belt Maka. Yeah.
Oh, and it's got one extra Hall of Triumph.
Correct. That totally changes that. No, it's this pretty much the same.
Yeah, deck. It's the same deck. Okay, good.
Okay.
So it's good to know that Star City's still bad at this.
But at least all of their decks are in order.
Well, that's true.
That's Jund, right.
Let's see, we'll finish out the top 16 and Jund midrange, a black-red midrange. What's that look like? A black-white midrange, another rabble-red, another mono-red aggro, and a mono-blue devotion. What's black-red midrange? I don't think I've seen this particular one.
Dragons.
Oh, it's got Stormbreath Dragon in the mono-black deck. Oh, and there's Mizzium Mortars. Okay, good.
Dreadbore.
And Dreadbore. And Rakdos's Return.
It's got red cards in it.
It's got red cards in it as opposed to a blue card.
Ooh, it's got Vess in the board. That's always fun.
It's got what? Oh, Vess.
Yeah.
Hey, Lily. Hey, girl.
Lily's hanging out with Anger of the Gods. She will dig out an answer.
I mean, that seems about her speed, though, to be fair.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, okay. She did have that thing with that wildlife preservist, and that didn't go well, I hear.
Whoa. Family show. Okay, so looking at the Rabble Red and Mono Red aggro decks in the second one,
Yeah. Like
the second grouping, there's no Rabble Master in the Mono Red aggro deck in 15th place.
Okay, so that makes sense.
So it's actually a somewhat different Red aggro deck. So, yeah, at least these are different. Okay, moving on. So that was standard. You can tell we're running through this because the big news is much more interesting.
Way more interesting.
So, Legacy.
Legacies! We had 285 players show up for Legacies, and taking it all down was Shardless Bug, piloted by Jake Mondello. It's nice to see not a Delver deck in first, but sadly we have one in second with Rug Delver. Rest of your top eight, we have Esper Deathblade, Bant Stoneblade, Metalworker, Dredge, more Dredge, and then finally a blue-white-red Delver. So only two actual Delver quote-unquote decks in the top eight. So that's nice, I guess.
Two
Dredge decks made top eight? That's a little weird. Don't listen, Legacy players. There's this stuff, it's called Graveyard Hate. Where did it go? Why aren't you...
Graveyard? It's got kinda, bouncing.
You kinda need the Graveyard Hate. So, yeah. But yeah, let's take a quick glance at these two. They look pretty darned similar. Yeah, pretty darned similar. Huh. They seem light on Dread Returns.
Well, to be fair, you only needed to fire off the once, right?
Yeah, but the one list, if I'm reading this right, the sixth place list with Chris Jordan has none.
Huh. Well,
that is what I'm looking
what
for.
What would they have that would matter then? I mean, Anime Dead, maybe?
Nope.
Huh.
No, it looks like it's purely on the Bridge from Below plan and...
Narcomoeba, get there.
I guess maybe actually casting the Grave Troll?
I mean, to be fair, that's not a terrible plan, though, when you sit there and think
about but
it.
Usually what I see people do, though, is they get most of their cards into the graveyard, and then they use their Icarids to flash back the Dread Return to get out the Golgari Grave Troll.
No, I mean, I've seen that same exact thing, but kind of theoretically speaking, I guess, you know, you can beat them down with tokens early, which is usually Dredge's main plan, in all honesty.
Yeah. It really is.
And then hard casting the Grave Troll, that removes the risk of it being targeted in the graveyard, which also gives you a little bit of an over the top edge, I guess. But then you run the risk of getting taken out by Force of Will. So I don't know. It's very interesting, but it's not a completely unsound strategy.
Yeah, it just seems a little less versatile, less nimble than one that actually has some Dread Return action.
Okay, While I agree with you, Clues, I think on the other hand, though, you know, sometimes Dredge wins because people aren't expecting it. And if you can keep the unexpected unexpected, you know, all the more power to you, right?
Yeah.
So what did I miss when I stepped away for a minute?
We have two Dredge decks.
Clues, actually. And... Yeah, we actually had relevant Legacy discussion. It was really weird.
Yeah, we had a real nice discussion about these two different Dredge decks that made the top eight.
Are they different?
Yeah, well, a little. They're curious to me. Look, you should go back and listen to this episode for that little segment right there. Because we could rehash it, but the listeners at home have already heard this. Steve, who's on the bus? Steve, listen, I know we just talked about it, so we're not going to talk about it again, but you can rewind.
Oh, so he's missing a Dread Return.
Yeah, and the other guy's only got one at all in his main board and no useful targets except the Grave Troll. But look, we're done with talking about the Dredge.
That's what I'm here for, is to make us done talking about Dredge.
Yeah, while they were doing that...
Other decks.
I was looking at the Metalworker deck, but really I was just looking at the Metalworker card art and playing Mega Man music in my head. And that made me pretty happy.
And outside of the top eight, we've got Miracles, some Sneak and Show. A Burn deck came in 11th.
Woohoo!
Fantastic. The Mono Red Sneak Attack that we saw, was it last week or the week before?
Yep.
That's in 12th.
Nice.
Imperial Painter in 13th and some other stuff. So there you go. And that was Legacy.
Yay! I'm collecting burn decks. That's what I'm doing.
Making a necklace?
Yes.
Excellent.
Modern?
Modern.
Modern!
125 players! 125 players for Modern.
That doesn't seem like enough. Oh, I guess there was a GP in... Wait, no, that was in Kobe!
And Sydney.
Kobe!
No, Modern. Modern GP.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
I think he wants his Kobe.
So.
Oh, great. I'm going to have to go watch the Juggernaut after this again.
Right? I'm going to watch them both. Okay, so.
You know there were three parts?
What? No, I meant both as in the Juggernaut and the real Ghostbusters one.
Oh, yeah. They had three parts of the Juggernaut and two Ghostbusters one there.
There were two Ghostbusters? I did not know that.
So, that was a modern tournament.
Yeah. So.
Heard it here first.
Mark Donaldson won with a Storm deck, but I don't know which Storm deck is just Storm.
Are there that many different Storm decks in Modern these days?
I don't pay any attention to Storm decks in any format, so I don't know. Looks like his is running Grapeshot and Pyromancer Ascension. And that's it as far as win condition. I guess you could beat down with Goblin Electromancer if your opponent sucks.
Wow. You get an achievement for doing that,
right? Well, if you can
keep
the unexpected unexpected, guys. It's totally logical, guys.
Hey,
I amaze myself with my own stupidity and irrelevance on the show sometimes.
So I do want to tell one quick story completely unrelated to this Storm deck, but it's something.
Oh, by all means, that is the ongoing theme this episode by far.
That's someday we'll get to the really important news. So it's got a swan song here in the sideboard. Right?
I noticed that.
And I was playing, I suspect he's using the swan song for the same reason that I bring it up in this story. I was playing some Legacy over the weekend with a buddy who was on a Sneak and Show deck, and I was on Cheerios, but I couldn't actually find my that green spell.
Glimpse
of Nature. Yeah, I couldn't find my Glimpse of Nature, but that's okay. He couldn't find any targets for his show and tell. So I just cast a couple of Memnites and started with the beatdown plan, and he eventually had to cast one of his show and tells and then swan song it just to get the 2/2 to start blocking.
That's an achievement. I'll give him that one.
And he won. He managed to hang on long enough to finally find a target for the other show and tell that was in his hand. And I got to show and tell in, I believe, an ornithopter, I think is what I put in off of that show and tell. Under the hopes that it could then, you know, go ahead and block whatever he put in. But alas, no, I only had six permanents at that point, and he put in the flying spaghetti monster. So anyway, I suspect this swan song may actually be here so that he can swan song something of his own if he needs to make a 2-2.
In case someone's attacking him with Memnites, yeah.
In case someone's attacking him with Memnites, that's what I'm saying. No, actually, the Shatterstorms are probably there for the Memnites.
Just in case Memnites show up, better have that Shatterstorm.
That's well,
legacy
for,
tech. And
for robots, in general is what the Shatterstorm is for. But anyway, I'm sorry. Storm was number one. What else we got?
All right, we've got fairies in second. Now, is this an honest, like, straight up old school fairies deck? It is.
Looks like it. With the Snapcaster, yes. But yeah.
All right,
oh,
Jack.
That feels so good to hear that.
Keep your pants on. It'll be all right. But yeah, he's...
I hate I sold all my stuff for it.
He's running, I mean, what you'd think. Mistbind Click, Spellstarter Sprite, Vendilion Click, Cryptic Command, Bitter Blossom. I guess that's it as far as actual fairies, but still. He's also
that's
got...
That's all you need.
It's true, yeah. He's also got Snapcaster Mage and all of the good blue and black things you could ever want. And Shadow of Doubt. Check that out. That's nice,
yeah,
tech.
I haven't seen that in a while.
I haven't seen that in a while in Modern. Yeah. It pops up every once in a while in Legacy, I think.
No, I haven't seen that in quite some time.
Really?
It's an instant for two blue-black hybrid mana. And not two, and a blue-black, but blue-black, blue-black. Two hybrids. Players can't search libraries this turn. Draw a card.
It's pretty cool.
Oh, wow. That is an old one. Gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that card now.
Pretty
cool.
Take
that, Pod. Ravnica the First.
Oh, Pod. You know, that's a good point.
Or fetch lands?
Or fetches, yeah, but it's even funnier against Pod.
No, I think it's funnier against a fetch, because, seriously, you haven't known anger until you go to fetch, and you can't.
Or
usually
it's fetch the next turn, he spellstutters it?
Usually it's stifle, but, yeah.
Or, I was about to say, the delicious tears of stifling a fetch land. Oh, how they weep. How they weep.
Okay, so third
right.
place is a Rug Twin deck. Rug Twin, is that Turmo Twin? Is that what that means?
Probably.
Goyf,
yep.
He's there. So yeah.
Huntmaster, Goyf, Pestermite.
Yep, Deceiver,
yeah.
Twin, yep, okay. Let's see, a black-green mid-range. Does this have a... what is this?
Well, it is a deck with...
it's not loading is what it is.
Card. Dark Confidant, Pack Rat, Scavenging Ooze, Tarmogoyf. This looks like a deck I'd want to play. Liliana the Veil... yeah, this is actually a deck I'd like to play.
A Batter Skull and a whole lot of murder.
Doesn't this kind of deck have a name?
If it had white, it would be junk, but it has no white, so...
so there's no junk in its trunk.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking. I'm confusing this with a junk deck. Okay, so a black-green mid-range deck, then. If
and
you know what
I,
that's called,
I suspect...
send us an email.
Yeah, I suspect that if Stoneforge Mystic were legal, this would be a junk deck.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, fifth place, Kinky Pod, because duh. We laugh at your Shadow of Doubt.
That's fair.
Sixth place, Blue-Red Twin, good old twin deck. Seventh place is Affinity/Robots. Eighth is Jund midrange. Black-White Tokens, Black-Green midrange. Blue-White Red Control, Blue-White Tron. Wait, Blue-White Tron? What's in the Blue-White
Tron?
My brain has been hooked on the... the red green Tron, and then Mike's black green Tron.
Let's see, it's rocking Elish Norn,
Iona. Yeah, okay.
That's mean.
And then a Sphinx's Revelation and a whole lot of just good stuff. Okay. Wow, Celestial Colonnade. They can just turn on Celestial Colonnade and not even care. Like,
just
it's
cause?
Just,
yeah.
It's just three mana, three lands. Burp, burp, burp. It's a dude. Whew, that's brutal. So essentially, it's just a blue-white control deck that happens to have a Tron thing going on.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, yeah, why not? It makes perfect sense.
Doesn't have a lot of other ways to get Emrakul out, so...
what's with all the one... Gifts Ungiven. Okay. That's
that
what's with all
so
the
mean.
One
absolutely. That card is torturous. When really Modern first started up, me and Carlos, actually from CommanderCast, that dude, we built together a gifts deck where the main win con was to mindslaver people infinitely. That was fun. Good times. Good times.
I mean, like, so you cast your Gifts Ungiven, and then you dig out a Wrath of God, a Supreme Verdict, a Day of Judgment, and who cares? They're going to die.
Pretty much.
That's great.
It's all the reasons you hate us, the deck.
It makes sense to me. Is he running any Mind Slavers? No, I don't see any. That's shame. A shame. It is.
Shame, shame, shame.
You think he'd at least have one in the board just because. But I guess there's no way to recur it in this deck, so I guess that's okay. Alright, what's in the rest of the top 16? Another Jund midrange, another twin deck, a four-color pod, and an angel pod?
Angel pod.
What's, is that Resto? What's
Resto, angel? Resto, Archangel of Thune.
Oh.
Linvala.
Oh. Oh,
I love Linvala.
You're a bastard.
Yeah.
Do-do-do-do.
Lark. It's not an angel, but I pretend.
What else? Linvala, I guess that's all the angels, but that's enough, for God's sake.
Heather Dawn is happy somewhere.
Yes.
She plays it. She doesn't care.
In Vegas.
She doesn't know why, but she's smiling right now because we're talking about this deck.
Let's see. So that was Modern.
Ta-da!
Modern still seems healthy. Legacy's good. Standard wasn't that bad. I like it. We're in a good place.
Yeah, it'd be a shame if we did something to it.
I know. It's almost like, you know, if only something could come along and just ruin this great camaraderie and happiness we have going. Oh, wait. Yeah.
Jack, you're obviously talking about the death of Kaijudo.
Oh, I mean, actually, I am kind of sad about that because I don't know if you guys know the guy, but Robot Large from Twitter. Robot Large said it best where he said that Kaijudo was like that stepping stone to get younger kids into MTG and other games. And Large and a lot of other people actually went great distances to try and create a nurturing environment for those young players until they were actually old enough to get into stuff like Magic and other card games. And, you know, when a card game dies, it's bad all around. Like, first of all, it's bad for the kids because there's a lot of kids, I should know, I was one, where, you know, maybe your parents work different shifts or something like that, or you just need somewhere to hang out after school. And having a card game, and especially with people you know, in an environment that's safe, that really creates a good place where you can go and things like that. And I know I'm starting to talk over if that's you who's actually, oh no, somebody else messaging me. Never mind, Chewy. But it creates a good environment for people. And like, when that's taken away, it's bad for the kids. It's bad for the parents who are like, well, you know, I spent all that money on that card game and then they just canceled it. Hurt, hurt. Well, not doing that again. So it actually denies their kid that kind of social interaction. So all around, Kaijudo closing down is just bad. There's no nice way to cut it.
Yeah. So for those who have not heard, the upcoming release of the Vortex expansion for Kaijudo on the 29th of August will be the last paper release. Now, I believe Kaijudo lives on in digital format right now, and I think they're planning on continuing that for a bit, because they have at least another set or two in the works, but the last paper one will be Vortex.
And that's I didn't realize that there was a digital version.
Yeah, I only knew because I did buy a couple of Kaijudo decks just to try it out, just see what it was like. Their packaging was phenomenal on some of their stuff. I just want to point that out.
That is true.
And Kaijudo was a fine game. You know, it was, it's not quite Magic Lite, but, you know, it shares much DNA with Magic as a game. My biggest complaint was always that you had no second main phase. After you attacked, you're done. And I always wanted to do second main phase stuff. So I would often attack and then realize, oh, I should have cast that, but it's too late now. So I am somewhat sad that Kaijudo is gone. I didn't really play it that much. I wasn't really into it, but I think Jack actually hit the nail on the head there. Anytime you have something like this go away, it's bad for the fans of that game, and many of the fans of that game could have become fans of this game that we love. So,
and yet, oddly enough, that goes away so soon after Versus comes back. So maybe there's some game reincarnation going on.
Did you say Versus came back?
Yeah, the Versus system's coming back, buddy.
I mean, this isn't the first time Kaijudo dies, either.
No, this is not the first time.
Because it was originally Duel Masters.
Yeah.
Correct.
And that's what happens when you kill a game, but you don't cut off the head, burn the body, and scatter the ashes at a crossroads. They will come back.
With salt around it as well.
What about Sage? You forgot to burn the Sage.
Well, I wanted to come back.
Oh, right. Okay. Never mind.
Oh, we've all watched Supernatural. Yay. I haven't either. Okay.
I just don't leave bodies
either, man.
For people to
find. That show's stupid.
My Manapool co-host.
Way too hot for me to watch it.
My Manapool co-host Brian has been trying to get us to watch Supernatural for a very long time. In fact, once when we all went over to his house to play Magic one day, which was a rare thing, it still is, he actually made us break for lunch we ordered pizza. We sat there eating pizza, and he made us watch the first episode.
Wow.
Against some of our wills, because I was there to play Magic. I didn't care about your stupid show that you're trying to get me hooked on. I'm here to play Magic. But I relented, and we watched the stupid show, and you know what? I've never watched another one, and then we went back to play Magic. It is on my instant queue on Netflix, though.
Like,
so.
After you get past the first season, it's the best bad comic book you'll ever watch.
I don't know. I've seen Heroes.
Oh, no, Heroes was god-awful. There's a difference. That was an actual bad comic book. Like, Supernatural, did you ever watch Kojak the Night Stalker?
Nope. That's also on my instant queue on Netflix.
I've watched
it's like
watch
Kolchak
it, and
on steroids.
I watched it's the like Kolchak Kolchak show, that was bad.
Okay, so getting back.
So hey, yeah, let's
getting
talk
back on
things.
Time. So Kajito is gone. We're sorry. I mean, I don't play Kajito, but what Jack, everything Jack said, I don't believe I'm about to say this. Everything Jack said about it is true.
Oh, validation.
Yeah. Yeah, that is certainly what just happened.
Let's see. While we're on delaying
I'm
the big
right
news.
On occasion.
Yeah, I thought we might just get all this other stuff out of the way first. It won't
yeah,
take long.
Fun. The new F&M promo for, what is that, November?
This is the creepiest thing ever, and I don't want to talk about it.
Is,
no, we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, it's Brain Maggot.
Oh, God.
And it's pretty creepy.
That artwork
yeah,
is, oh,
let's see.
Man, that
is. Did Will write this with it in the show notes? The possibly not safe for work, it's pretty gross? Or could you add that?
Yeah, I did not add that, but this okay. is the stuff of nightmares, folks.
That is terrifying.
So again, September is Banishing Light. That's next month. October is a fanatic of Xenagos who's spilling his booze, or mead, or whatever that is, and that's a problem.
Tang.
His tang. He's spilling his tang.
Dumping the tang.
And then Brain Maggot.
Ugh.
I did not realize
like
that was an ear and until
you know,
just now.
Yeah,
and
see?
You know why
that is
I
not
like
where
this?
Maggots go.
Why do you
yeah,
like
that
this?
Is, well, it depends on what country you're in. I mean, it's either that or a drop bear, right? I like this because Fat Pack Hero restarted recently. And as I was building the new deck list for it, I noticed a lot of these cards were actually reasonably cheap foils. I've got four of the Doomwake Giant promo. I've got four of the Sin Collector. And now I can have four brain maggots. Oh, it's going to be like this happy little family of
oh, God.
Horrible,
that
horrible nightmares.
Collector and that, man, those things don't belong in the same deck because they are just too damn
well,
creepy.
Well, why do you think he's got that hook? He's got to pull the maggot out.
And that's science.
Let's go to another topic, shall we?
Let's go to another. So, yeah, everyone in November, stop
don't
playing
win your F&M. You don't want to do it. You don't want this.
Just scoop at the end.
That's right. You don't even want to be in the loser's bracket.
Actually,
if
no.
If
be a good person.
Shop gives away stuff.
No. You want to win all of these so that the kids who get lucky or play really, really well don't have to take this home and their parents see it and then they can never play Magic again. Do it for the children. Win that F&M every week.
And then send it to Clues. I'll give you his address.
No.
Send them to me and I will sign them and send them back to you. I promise.
After we send them to Clues. Clues, you can put a little bow tie on his ear.
No, they're no.
Oh, that's
no
true. He modified
it. Can ever
them.
Come of this.
Oh, but look at all the room for bow ties.
Okay. So continuing to move on to this other stuff. At PAX. Oh crap. I didn't open this. Yeah, here it is.
Yeah, you should open
it. Clues,
that.
Did you open this?
Yes.
That's a no. Okay. So Sunday. At PAX. Or is this at PAX?
I believe so.
Yes, this is at PAX, yeah. This okay. is at PAX Prime this coming weekend, yes.
It says it's at the Hedgehog Theater Grand Hyatt Hotel Level 1. Is that where PAX is?
Oh, well, PAX is ever expanding. Some of the panels have had to go to surrounding venues because
holy crap.
Of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, Dragon Con spread over five buildings. I'm sure PAX is the same way.
I didn't know that either. Okay, so yeah, if you're going to PAX this weekend... Which is not Bill, but it is Clues.
It is Clues, that's right.
By all means, find Clues there. Clues is tickled to meet you at PAX.
Bring him a brain maggot.
Don't bring me a brain maggot. I will be, you know, just one of the many people in the throng of geeks. You'll easily be able to pick me out. No, you won't be able to pick me out. Even if I would say I'm the guy wearing a bow tie, no, that does
yeah,
not.
Yeah, that's not even close, yeah.
Yeah.
Not this weekend.
But anyway, on Sunday, 1:30... And
yeah, you can find me at this panel. This is one of the things, there are like two things that I absolutely must do at PAX, and one of them is this panel.
Nice. So, this is the world building panel for, Cons of Tarkir, and I'm sure they're gonna preview some stuff, or
they
show
absolutely
off some stuff.
Will. I will try and live tweet some things, but other people are better at it than me, so you'll hear about it before you hear it from me.
Okay, what he said.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, so if you're there, go to that.
So, yeah, if you're there, go to that. And if you're not there, then you might be at Dragon Con, go find Bill.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah, do
Bill
that.
Bill is awesome.
Phil is awesome.
I will not have special preview cards for you, unfortunately, but we can still hang out.
He will not, yeah. And if he does, then I'm smacking for not bringing him here.
My bad.
Okay, so do we want to talk about the big news? What I didn't read Sam Stodd's article last week, and I feel bad about it. It showed up in our show notes as we were wrapping up, and I was like, you know what? No.
Yeah, give us the short version.
Yeah, what's the short version?
The short version is that they've decided that 4-mana Wrath of God is no good.
No good?
As in, like, no good will come from it in the immediacy. So instead of 4-mana straight up destroy all creatures, they're experimenting more with things like Anger of the Gods, which is, you know, 3 to 4 mana, does stuff that can have that effect, but not absolute. Or 5+ mana, all creatures and some other effect tied in. It's mainly rooted in the fact that when it's an aggro versus control matchup, if control has the 4-mana wrath, then the game boils down to, ha, got him. And now just, you know, clean up. And if they don't have it, then they get run over and they don't want turn 4 to be the only turn that matters in that entire matchup. So they're going to experiment with other stuff for a while and we'll see what happens.
I'm okay with that.
That means that because, they won't reprint Damnation in Standard though, bitches.
They were never doing that.
Okay.
Yeah.
We don't use that kind of language around here.
The hell you say when they don't reprint Damnation? Bitches.
In all fairness, though, I'm completely okay with this. Because, like, yeah, there we go. Aggro has been a viable strategy for a while, but especially now that we're experiencing a renaissance with control, it's suffering a really hard time, to be honest with you. And basically, they're having to ramp out into bigger creatures that control simply can't deal with, unless they wrath the board. So, yeah, I'm totally cool with this.
I'm okay with it.
It's a neat experiment. Like, the actual article goes a lot more into detail on it and shows, like, the last time there wasn't 4-mana Wrath in Standard and how that lasted 3 months.
There wasn't a Wrath variant in a core set other than Planar Cleansing? And we had to wait till the next set?
Till the fall set when we got Day of Judgment, yeah.
Right, okay, yeah.
And so we had that, and then it went into, well, then we tried this whole thing with Supreme Verdict, where we're like, you know, well, what if, you know, Wrath in one color is just too good? So let's try it in 2 colors, but make it uncounterable. And I'm like, but I don't know. So they're just trying. It's neat. I'm looking forward to seeing how it works, especially in light of the news that we're teasing you about, but not telling you.
Well, I mean, everybody knows already. They just want to hear what we have to say about it.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, go check out Sam Stodd's article. I'm going to read it as soon as we're done here because I didn't realize I hadn't read it until we were done. So, Clues, you put this thing here on fakes.
Yeah, I was going to save that till the end if we had time, but okay, we'll just mention it here.
We're going to spend the rest of this episode on this other thing, so go for it.
Okay, good point. So there was an article I came across on, or a post I came across on Reddit. There was a PTQ down in Florida last weekend. And basically, the long story short, there were a couple of completely fake decks that appeared. Not a couple of fake cards, but wholesale decks. The entire deck was fake. And it was a guy who had bought some modern decks from someone he met. Don't know who. I have no names for you. But basically the guy was trying to unload 3 modern decks fast. So he unloaded 3 complete intact modern decks for $1,000. And, yeah, they're all 100% fake. And yeah, I'm just saying, if it looks like you're getting a good deal, the deal might be too good. It's not really a deal.
As the old saying goes, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is.
Way true. So, you know, if you're going to be trading cards, if you're going to be buying cards from not an established reseller, you know, one of the big guys, look at the cards out of a sleeve. Protect yourself, protect the community, protect the game. That's what I'm saying.
So for the people who click on the link, Clues, and they pull up the picture at the bottom where it has spot the fake, can you tell them how they would spot the fake using these exact cards?
Yeah, okay, so it's a little bit hard if you're not used to looking at these things, and these pictures aren't spectacular as far as that goes. But so the picture on the article, it has 2 Scalding Tarns that you can see, and the one on the left is too shiny compared to the one on the right. That's the kind of first dead giveaway. And this is one of those things that, you know, I'd like to be able to tell you that it's a perfect test and it works every time, but there are 2 different printers, at least 2 different printers for WotC products. The main printer will not ever be this shiny. The printer for any auxiliary products like the dual decks or, you know, anything like that, those will be shinier, but they still won't look quite like this. And this particular Scalding Tarn, I can't tell if it's the guy's camera that he used, but if you look at the artwork for it, it just looks a little bit off. It looks like there are like, horizontal lines through it, which are obviously from where it was printed,
like
in my opinion.
Yep.
Yeah. And I don't know. It just looks off. You know, the edge isn't nearly as clean. If you look at the right hand edge of the card on the left, if you zoom in, cause it's a pretty high res picture, you can see that the edge looks a little bit jagged from where it was cut. And the cuts on, an actual WotC printed card are nice and clean. So, you know, there are just a bunch of little things that don't add up. So, yeah, you know, I mean, at some point we've done a Card Advantage episode where we did talk about fakes a bit, but I feel like it might be a topic worth revisiting and, maybe take a couple of these examples from the web and dissect exactly what's wrong with them, but.
Alarmist!
I'm not alarmist.
Yeah. No,
you can also see
if you say you're raising the alarm.
I might be casting a spell for one and a white. This is true. If you look at the name Scalding Tarn in the top, if you look at the R and the N in Tarn on the one on the right, they're nice and clean. And if you look at the one on the left, they look just a little bit ragged. And so once again, I mean, it's just a bunch of little things that make you go, yep, that one's fake.
You would say that, well, just as I close the picture.
The reason people get away with this kind of thing, though, is most people do not look past the surface depth of their own perception. Like, this guy was probably like, oh, a modern deck for so cheap. Scalding Tarns? Yeah, sure, I'll do that. That's near what I need.
People see what they want to see is really what it boils down to. And what really troubles me is you put this card in a sleeve, particularly you put it in like a matte sleeve, and it's now sitting 2 feet from you. It's really hard to tell. Now you got to call this out. If you see it, if you actually see a card that your opponent is playing and you actually think it's fake, don't just start doing this willy-nilly or we'll never get tournaments done. But you know, if you see something that doesn't quite add up, feel free to say something, right? I mean, we're here to help. At the same time, judges, I don't want you to go all crazy vigilante on us, you know, checking everybody's decks all the time, running around, grabbing cards out of people's hand. Is this fake? No, we don't want to do that. If you do encounter fake cards in a tournament, and this is really more of a message to the judges out there, do not confiscate the deck. Okay, that is not your job. That is not your task. You are not there to get evidence for WotC. You know, if the player wants to give you the deck, that's fine, but do not demand it. That is not something that you have the power to do. Do make WotC aware of it, and do make sure that the player, cannot play those cards in this tournament anymore. If you think the player honestly was duped, that they did not know that this was a fake card, that's fine. We can replace it with a basic land of their choice, give them a penalty, and carry on with life. If you think they knew and were doing it on purpose, yeah, they're getting a one-way trip to Dairy Queen. So, that's, you'll have some paperwork to fill out, but that's fine.
God, I love Blizzards.
Me
too.
They're
pretty good. Yeah, so like, just realistically, if you're sitting down and you think your opponent has these, do you play out the round and call a judge before you send the slip, or what? Like, what should you actually do?
Yeah, if you actually have an honest belief, you need to inform a judge right away. Because, okay, here's what can happen. Let's say that you wait. Let's say that you don't want to say something right away. Okay, so you play out the match. And let's say you lose the match, and then you call the judge and say, hey, judge, I think those cards are fake. And the judge is going to ask some questions like, when did you think those cards were fake? And you're going to say, turn one, when he played that Scalding Tarn that's too shiny. And you're going to say, well, why did you not tell me then? It's going to be pretty hard to convince the judge that you weren't just waiting for the most opportune moment to do it. Now, at the same time, if you don't feel comfortable, like, you know, calling it out right then and there, and you want to wait until later, I'm not going to force you to do it now. Just know what it's going to look like, okay? Anyway, I've been told I'm being alarmist. I'm just saying
that
we all need to
be vigilant. No, you started, listeners, in the show notes, it says, more stuff on fakes. I am not being alarmist, I swear. Now, who's the first person that's going to say I'm not being an alarmist?
Someone who's not being an alarmist,
nope.
Obviously.
Someone who's being an alarmist, otherwise they wouldn't think to mention it. So you brought this on yourself. All this ridicule is all yours.
All right.
That's
fine.
Why Doctor Who doesn't wear a bow tie anymore. It's your fault.
I will take the ridicule.
Hey, who is the new Doctor Who?
Peter Capaldi.
Who the hell is that?
He's Peter Capaldi.
I mean, how do you spell that?
I hate... Let me put it like this.
We can't quote him on Monday Night Magic.
Yet there are some things from him that we cannot quote on Monday Night Magic. This is true.
I just want to see a picture. Oh, that guy.
But he was a guest star on, was it The Fires of Pompeii, I believe was the name of the episode, yes. Which also had the woman who plays Amy, or who played Amy Pond.
Yes.
They're both in that episode.
That show reuses actors a lot.
Okay.
At any rate, we could go down the Doctor Who rabbit hole, but Jack would hang up and we'd never get to the news. Let's get to
news. I like the new Doctor Who.
Actually, really? I would hang up and that would mean this call would be over, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I could call them back. I'm still recording.
Good. So, let's get to the big news before Jack starts to speak.
The big news.
I do not care about Doctor Who, and I don't care how many of our listeners do. So.
Love you too, baby.
Mwah.
Skeletor.
I think Christopher Eccleston was the best one.
Nice one.
I don't know what that means. Hey, okay, wait. I do want to get off on Doctor Who for half a second. Who is the guy from the old series with the scarf?
Tom Baker.
That's
Tom
his
Baker.
Name. Tom Baker,
the fourth Doctor, yeah.
Tom Baker, the fourth Doctor?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe not Tom Baker.
It was Tom Baker if you're talking about a scarf.
He was the one with the scarf.
Oh, okay. Did he have the tall, like, poofy Jufro hair?
Yes, that's Tom Baker.
Okay, yeah. He is the guy on the Sci-Fi Channel when I was younger. Transformers would come on while I was eating my breakfast before I went to school, and then the Doctor Who music would play, and I would leave. And the last thing I would see before I turned the TV off and had to go was Tom Baker's face zooming in on me with the theremin playing in the background.
Yep.
And that was freaking awesome, and that's all of my Doctor Who knowledge.
They're doing that kind of stuff again with the show, so you might enjoy it.
But I'll never know because I'm not going to watch it. So
that's fair.
So today at 11 o'clock, Mark Rosewater decided to drop the bomb that he hinted at last week. So last week he was like, okay, watch out for my article next week. It's going to be one everybody talks about. And I was like, shut up, Rosewater. But he was right because here we are freaking talking about it.
Islands are in fact banned. Sorry, guys.
Yay!
I mean, rejoice! I didn't think Clues could do it, but that letter writing campaign really came through.
Man,
he sent it off to the president. He had his survey, and it turns out the president's like, yeah, presidential order, no more islands.
Yep.
Yep.
That's because I blame Cuba.
Bumch. Sure he's not a black creature?
That is terrible.
I'm going to just leave you hanging on that one, buddy.
Are you sure you don't want
to? Send all hate mail courtesy to Chewy at mtgcast.com.
Yeah, so Rosewater, in his article at 11 o'clock today,
yes,
talked about some of the problems that Magic has sort of had lingering for a while.
Problems? But no one has any complaints about Magic.
Not ever. And, you know, just to jump ahead slightly, there was a lot of big and news that has ramifications, and the response was overwhelmingly positive. I think it's the end of Magic.
I know. Someone on a Reddit thread did make the joke that R&D has made an announcement that no one complained about, which is an integral part of Magic. They're killing Magic. I'm quitting.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's not because of the news itself. It's because of the reaction to the news. So one of the issues Rosewater refers to as the third set issue. And it's been a thing for a very long time. The third set is always kind of meh.
Like, although, you know, sometimes they make the second set meh in an attempt to make the third set not terrible.
Yeah, which apparently Rosewater did, claims they did with Theros Block. I didn't notice because I actually didn't play any of Theros Block. So,
womp womp.
Yeah, but like I noticed it way back when I first got back into Magic, like Onslaught, Legions, Scourge.
Beta.
No, back in.
Oh.
So it's like Onslaught, Legions, Scourge. Onslaught was tribal, Legions was all creatures, Scourge dealt with converted mana costs. What? Like Mirrodin, Darksteel, Fifth Dawn, it was artifacts, it was more artifacts, it was five color. I'm sorry, what? Like it's always been this weakness. That whatever that is, it's very loud.
Yeah, who's eating a fruit roll up?
Jack?
No, me. No, it's not me.
Yeah. Mute your mic while you're doing stuff that's gonna come through the mic. Now.
I am so sorry I have a life, okay?
No, I'm so sorry you don't have a mute button.
I'm so sorry that I don't have a fruit roll-up.
I am also offended by the lack of fruit roll-up.
Well, maybe if you guys didn't get mad when I didn't mute.
Maybe you didn't mute. Now, so that's a problem. Like, it's just always been a problem. Something that has been less of a problem, but is still a thing, is the core set thing.
Explain more.
Okay, so a long time ago, back when, after 10th edition came out, Wizards was like, okay, this whole new players use the core set thing is a myth, and we're going to start putting new cards in the core set, because having just reprints is silly, and you people don't buy it, we want more money. and it just makes more sense other than that we want more money. And so they made it a yearly thing. They started putting new cards in the core set, and yet still no one cared. Like, it's just new cards in the core set.
I cared. I like the core set.
But why? Like, what is it, because it's a core set?
Well, actually, it's because I find it to be a purer form of Magic.
Because
it's not all gimmicky. It's more honest.
Except every year they've brought back some old mechanic and shoehorned it in.
Yeah, well, a little.
So maybe it's less gimmicky.
One of the things that I like about the core set is that if someone were new to Magic, it gives them a relatively good idea of what Magic is without the gimmicks of the blocks. Like, the example I used on Twitter is, if your first set was Scars of Mirrodin, you're going to have a really off idea of what Magic is.
Yes.
But, see, my response to that is the whole myth. No, damn it. I almost yelled the thing. I had to edit again. The core set is for noobs thing is, it's a myth perpetuated by just R&D. Because new players play what their friends are playing. Like, hey, what's this game you guys play? I want in. Or they get duels. Or they don't just, I want the easy stuff. Oh, look, M15, I'll take that.
I'm not talking about it from a difficulty perspective or a learning perspective. I'm talking about it purely in an idea of, what do the colors do? What is the set? What is the backbone of a Magic experience? If I were to give someone packs from a set so that they could, you know, start a collection, it would probably be core set packs. I mean, obviously I'd rather give them a deck and that's what I would do, but not everyone has that option. I mean, mind you, I'm willing to get rid of the core set. The only thing I'm really going to miss from the core set is the fact that it's an opportunity for them. Like this year's core set was great because they had a lot of things that they would never be able to shoehorn into a random set.
Like,
I mean, we had the neat legend cycle. We had
the souls.
I mean, the souls, they could have been big, cool things and the other things. The fact that they all have plain names on them is kind of neat, but.
So, okay. So based on just this last thing you've said, then it's a flavor thing.
I mean, flavor's a lot of
it. It's certainly partially a flavor thing, yeah.
They could have reprinted this new Avacyn and called her something else, and she would be the exact same creature, just without that nostalgic connection. And to newer players, there is no nostalgic connection. They don't know who or care who Avacyn is. It's like, oh, look what this angel does.
Right.
Well, they should care who Avacyn is.
Well, I'm not going to make that argument. what I will say, though, is that this is also where you can dump 5 planeswalkers without them having anything to do with the plot.
Now,
that is what the core set's job has been.
You can still do that. I mean, that's where Planeswalkers appeared, was in a set where they had no business being. It's not.
You mean Lorwyn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had nothing to do with the story of Lorwyn. That's just where they put them. They don't, they don't have to be thematically tied in. They just have been ever
since. Weren't ready in time for
Time Spiral. Yeah.
For Time Spiral.
But they just have been a core, like a key component of the expert level expansions ever since. But they don't have to be. There's no rule that says that.
Yeah.
Well, you know that we haven't actually outlined all the problems and yet got what the change is yet?
No, because we're still on one of the issues here.
Right.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I still say I enjoy the core set. I enjoy playing core set. It's pure, distilled, unfettered Magic with a mechanic thrown in for no reason.
And I don't believe that at all. Like, I don't know what you mean by pure Magic. Magic is whatever the cards say.
Yes, well, except for when there's poison. Camp.
Okay, except for when there's poison or dredge, yes.
Great. Well, let me kind of chime in here as well. I'm rather in the middle camp here. I never thought the core set was actually a good stepping stone for newer players because, as somebody that's kind of been in the game off and on for over a decade, like the rest of you guys, when I first started getting back into competitive Magic, was around 10th edition, actually. And so I went to the store and I was like, hey, what's the newest thing out? And they were like, here's this core set thing. And I bought it and I got stomped and that was horrible. And then when they finally started putting new cards into the core, no, like seriously, like as far as it being pure Magic, Clues, that's not what Magic is anymore. That's not what Magic has been for like 8 years or more.
I disagree with that statement, but please finish.
Okay. Well, so that aspect of it existed. And when they started putting newer cards into it, it really ceased to be the core set in spirit and execution anymore. Let's be completely honest here. Because there were cards that they started putting in there, like Silence and things like that, that newer players were not really going to understand. And as far as it being like pure Magic, I mean, yeah, let's take Silence, for example, because that was one of the first cards spoiled when they started doing that. Okay. if you're a newer player and you look at Silence, you're going to be like, oh, wow, that's cool. But you're not going to understand all of the implications behind Silence unless you're a more advanced player. And if you're an advanced player, then you're not – like, your only reason for looking to the core set is those new cards, not any of the reprinted cards, not anything like that that mattered, unless its name was Duress or Lightning Bolt or something like that. So the core set really did not have an audience, just like Mark Rosewater was saying. It was just this product – that had kind of been Frankenstein together over the last couple of years because they really had no idea how to market it. And that is why I'm okay with the core set leaving, because whatever the core set was at one point, the game has evolved past that.
Yeah, see, the only problem with that argument is that it doesn't apply to Clues, because Clues hasn't been playing or wasn't playing back before that change happened.
I certainly wasn't.
Yeah.
And although I temporarily fell off the call, I heard most of what you said there, Jack. So the thing that I disagreed with when I told you that I totally disagree with that. So Magic as a game is many things to many people, and that's one of its strengths. And so to say that even that concept of pure Magic is just not what Magic is anymore, I don't agree with that. That is certainly something that Magic can be. And there's certainly an audience for that. Now, is that audience necessarily new players versus advanced players? No, I don't think it is. I think that there are players who don't want to be on, for instance, the standard merry-go-round. I'm going to point at Chewy, because he definitely doesn't want to be on the standard merry-go-round.
That's not a thing. I get sick easily.
You can point at me.
I was going to say, I think I can point at
that subject as well.
Virtually everyone here on this cast. But I think there is a place and there is a role for a generic fantasy setting that isn't necessarily wedded to some big storyline issue that's going on, that is able to create, I hesitate to call it generic creatures or generic, cards, but take a thing like, Elvish Mystic. Okay. Elvish Mystic is a completely generic elf, right? He is a Llanowar elf without the Llanowar. Where else would you put that? If it were actually in a setting, you would want it to mesh flavorfully with that setting. You wouldn't want to introduce a brand new card that's generic. I mean, sure, by doing what they've done, by creating this generic card in the core set, they're now free to just cram it into whatever set they need, a green one-drop mana dork. But there's going to be a temptation to try and make it more unified thematically. And, you know, I think that's an outlet that they've lost if they get rid of the core set. And again,
I don't know why they couldn't, if they wanted to reprint Elvish Mystic, they couldn't find a plane that had elves and make
Elvish
Mystic.
They can. I just doubt that they would have necessarily created such a generic elf inside of a block context. I mean, now they're going to have to if they want to reuse it, but.
I have a counterpoint here, but I will save that until we get to one of the other problems in the discussion.
Okay. Awesome.
Okay. So, okay. Let's move on then. Why not? As you can tell, the core set thing is, it's probably the one thing that the standard players are like, don't care, and all everyone else has an opinion about. the third issue here is the metagame issue. And this is an actual problem because we have been talking about Mono Black Devotion decks ever since Theros came out, the first set. And it's still here. Now people splash blue and call it a different deck. No, it's the same freaking deck. Because there are big tournaments all the time, multiples in a weekend most of the time, and the formats and the internet allows free exchange of all information at all times, so formats get, I don't want to say solved, but what's good and what's not becomes pretty clear very quickly. And that's, it's not, I don't know if it's a problem, but it's,
oh, it's a problem.
It's something to be concerned about. Like, it's a problem for us because we have to talk about the same crap every week, but.
Well, you know, interacting with players and interacting with people online, people know when it's stale, and it's obvious when it's stale.
Unless you're on Twitter, in which case it's always stale. Jack, do you hate standard?
Well, hold on. I was on mute because I was typing. okay. I can agree with the assessment that standard gets solved a lot quicker. I don't necessarily go so far as to say I would hate it or that that's bad. But there's been a lot of communication changes that have altered how we experience the game. Social media flourishes. Like, I'm on Twitter all day long. I don't know about you guys, because you guys have actual jobs and lives, and, you know, you're accomplishing things with those lives, and I'm not envious or crying in my pillow at night at all. But because of that, like, as Mero stated in the article, standard's no longer really a puzzle. Because, you know, you watch the Pro Tour, you watch the SCG events, and instead of trying to reinvent the wheel, especially given the limited
card pool that we have access to with the format, you just kind of go after whatever they're doing and you alter it to your metagame. So yeah, standard, the way it was built up back when people were first really tinkering around with it, we were a much less connected society, and that has a lot to do and directly affects many aspects of this game.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, communication degree.
Woohoo! Okay, next. The storytelling issue. He says that, and this is a problem I've had with the Magic story for a long time, is that they try to turn this year-long Magic release schedule into this long and epic story, and it's crap.
Whoa.
Yes, it's crap. Used to do one book, one novel for every set, and those were almost entirely terrible. Then they started switching it up, and they did, okay, well, we'll do a block novel that tells the story of the block, and we'll do, like, a Planeswalker novel in between, and that's where we got, like, the Jace novel and the Chandra novel, and the Shards of Alara, like, book by Doug Baer, who that was the last good Magic book I read. And sometimes even that's too much, like the whole Scars of Mirrodin book, which was crap, because there's not much story. Like, there's not a novel there.
Well, I just hated everything about the Scars of Mirrodin block, so...
Well, true. And then even with Theros, so they redid it again. Now instead of releasing a book, they're releasing three, like, a third of a book. And, okay, fine. But, like, I haven't read them, but I can sum up what happened in about 5 minutes. And you won't miss any of the high points. So...
Because there are no high points.
Well, I wasn't going to go that far, because some people really enjoyed them, like Clues. So I'm not going to say they're crap, because I haven't read them myself. But,
I don't know about really enjoyed.
Well, okay, some people moderately tolerated them then. Like Clues. Sure.
Some people hold up part of their table with it, yes.
There we go. But the thing is, like, trying to tell a story over an entire year in three sets is sometimes, most of the time, it's just stretching it. It's the world building for what you're doing just doesn't fit.
It also forces the audience to get something at such a slow pace that you can't build any kind of suspense or momentum. I mean, comic and books also suffer from that enough, and they come out monthly.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Now, I think that creative has done what they can to alleviate some of that. If we look at, like, some of the things that they did during Innistrad block and during Ravnica block, the things that they did on the website,
like Uncharted
stories,
Realms. Yeah, Uncharted Realms is a beautiful thing to help shore that up.
They
did
some
spectacular things. No one's saying that they haven't tried really hard. We're just saying it's still a problem.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, like, blatantly, they're doing an amazing job because we care at all. Like, I don't care about most other things that get updated that often. But they're still working within confines that could possibly be fixed.
Yeah. So, and there's always the story of what's going on, and then there's, like, all the, it's like a soap opera, there's all the Planeswalker subplots going on. And, like, we haven't messed with Tezzeret or Sarkhan Vol in a while, so we have to go, you know, 9-10 months before we even have a chance to think about them again, because they're not mentioned in this particular story.
I think the game also severely suffers, and I was surprised Mero didn't touch on this in his article. I think the game actually, from a storytelling perspective, suffers from too much Stack Overflow. And, like, what I mean by that is you've got
That's why they took combat damage off of it.
Oh, come on now. You've got flavor text, you've got art, you've got the website, you've got all the articles that go into flavor on the website, you've got the comic book, you've got the block book, you've got the Planeswalker book, you've got all this garbage tackling so many different aspects of the story at the same time, not to mention being touched by countless editors and writers, that invariably everything is going to become grossly convoluted along with this extremely crappy deadline that they've got going on. So it gets to a point where really players are going to absorb the story through whatever medium is readily available to them, and usually that happens to be flavor text and art. Like, the only time I ever really got into flavor was during Innistrad, because I thought the vampires were actually terrifying. I like their concept on the aristocracy of vampires, and that is the only time I've ever really gotten into the flavor. Like, when Elspeth died, I don't know enough about Elspeth outside of her flavor text to even give a crap.
And they also announced it, like, the day the book was made available.
Oops.
Yeah. So, oh well, any suspense you might have had, nope, out the window. But that's a bad decision on a whole other level.
And so, Amara Tandris is too big.
that Calvage, though. So, that's another thing. And then his final issue that he mentions here, I don't believe we've been on this so long and haven't even gotten to the news.
Yeah.
Is that...
Heard it here first, belatedly.
So they went back to Meriden, and that was amazingly popular, except for Clues and me.
And him. Any good right-thinking person.
Yeah, okay. But the fact that they went back was a big success. Like, maybe you didn't like Infect, but the fact that they went back was a huge success.
Oh yeah, going back was fine. It was just what they got.
And then we went back to Ravnica, which was a huge success. And once he started going, you know what? This is cool. So now they've got, you know, they've got Theros, they've got Tarkir, and then they have the next probably several, they have ideas already. And there's a list of plays. Okay, we want to go back here. We want to check in on this. We got this new one and this new one and this new one. This is like 40 years of stuff. And we haven't even started yet. So they have all these things they want to do, and they don't have the time to do them because they can only tell one story per year. So there's that. So they managed to find a way to solve all of these, and it's really quite simple.
Wait, change is bad.
Change is very bad, and I don't like change, and the real change that worries me is that Magic players weren't upset, and so I quit. Good night, everybody. But no. But the problem is very simple, and what they decided to do, and several people apparently came up with this independently, and that's a good sign. And so what they're doing is instead of a 3-block set and a core set every year, they're...
You mean a 3-set block.
A 3-set block, thank you. And a core set every year, they are knocking off the core set and having 2 2-set blocks.
Lorwyn Shattermoor style, if you will.
Except not, because Lorwyn and Shattermoor were intimately related. And these, while I'm sure they're going to do that again, because they... Rules are made to be broken. That's not going to be the norm. It's not going to be a 4-set super block. That's a 4-set super block. This is, so let's say, completely hypothetically, because Rosewater basically said on Tumblr that this isn't going to happen, but let's say the 2-set block after Khans of Tarkir is another new set, a new location, so they're going to, we'll call this plane Virginia. So they're going to Virginia and to the mighty Star City, and they're going to smite it into the ground. And then this second 2-set block after that, they're going back to Kamigawa! Those things are not related at all.
So like 2 crappy places back to back. I gotcha. That's how they're related.
Exactly. I didn't say West Virginia. I said Virginia.
Oh, okay.
They go to the plane of East Virginia. Now no one's offended.
Oh, or everyone.
And the trailer would have banjo music?
Yeah, okay, so
but that,
before we wander too far away, I want to make something clear right away, because the first time I read this and the first time I explained this to someone else, the immediate knee-jerk reaction was, oh, well, that means we're going to have fewer sets in a year. No, actually, it's the same number of sets.
Math is
in
not
a year.
Hard. If it was 3+1, now it's 2+2, same
which
thing.
Which is still 4, yeah. So 4 sets in a year. Okay, keep going.
Well, I mean, that's the main thing.
Well, there is something important that's going to occur, though.
There is something important that occurs because of that, but
yeah.
The actual change itself, no more corset. So what, 2016 will be the last one, or?
Yes, Magic 2016, which will be released in 2015 because we can't count, will totally be the last corset.
And then, well, you have been saying, I wish they'd quit that. Well, now they're gone.
Yeah, well, this is not what I meant.
It's
not what I meant.
So, yes, no more corset. Magic 2016 will be the last one, and Khans of Tarkir block will be the last 3-set block. After that, they're going to go to the 2-set block.
Back or at least the 2-set block is going to be the norm. I'm not sure that they said they'll never do a 3-set block, but that the norm.
Like I said, rules are made to be broken. They've done it several times before. It's
that said, here are the rules.
Yeah, that said, here are the rules. Now, because of that, okay, so why are there 3 changes? Magic blocks will be 2 sets each, okay. Magic will have 2 blocks per year. That's not a change. That's a natural, okay.
Well, that's the difference between what we were doing before, yeah.
And then core sets are no more. Okay, now, because of this, they're having to change the way that standard rotates, and this is very important.
Yeah, and why don't we tell them how it will be once it's doing it correctly before we tell them about the weirdness?
Okay.
Because there's going to be 1 year when it's weird.
Oh, then that's next year, right?
That's next year. Okay. So let's talk about how it's going to work when rotation becomes how it ought to be.
When it works, so right now, standard consists of 6, 8 sets, right? It's the
Yes, right now it is 8.
Right now it's 8 because we're in that weird no man's land between core sets. But the most we can get is 8 right now. Usually it's the core set, the entire previous block, and the block we're in right now. And then when the corset comes out, there's the two corset thing, but that's only for a few months. So that means, so Ravnica Block showed up and was in standard for 2 years, or will be in standard for 2 years. And then when Cons breaks, Ravnica falls off, and now it's just Theros Black and Cons, right? And the corset.
Yes.
Well, now, because they've changed the scheduling of things, and they didn't want to, I don't know how.
Yeah, okay, so let's explain it this way. So in the current method, it was always, what's legal in standard is the current set you're in, and all of the blocks since the most recent core set, or since the previous core set. So like right now, we have the set we're in, which is M14, and then we had the Theros block, and we had the previous core set, and we had Return to Ravnica block. We had all of that big expanse. And then when rotation occurs, something crazy happens. When rotation occurs, not only does the oldest block drop off, but the oldest core set drops off too. So we go from this huge, ginormous series of things to just Theros block, core set, and whatever, and cons is what would happen. Okay, that would be a normal rotation. And that is in fact what's going to happen. But beginning in 2016, we're going to make it totally easy on you. Okay. The biggest that standard can ever get is three blocks. So three two set blocks will be legal simultaneously. As soon as the first set in the next block is printed and released, we drop off the oldest set. So the smallest it will ever be is two blocks plus a set. And the biggest it will ever be is three blocks. So see how that works?
Yeah. So what this means is that instead of a single block being legal for 24 months, a single block will only be legal for 18 months.
Right.
Now, one of the downsides to that is also an upside for people like us, is that standard will rotate more often, which means stuff will not be stagnant for the last 6 months it's in here, because that 6 months actually won't exist. They're just cutting it off.
By the way, it has been pointed out that had we not all complained up a storm, originally next year all of the Pro Tours were supposed to be standard, and this is why. Because standard was going to be rotating so fast that it made sense for all of the Pro Tours to be standard.
So now my question is, do you think... Now, I know the answer is no, but how about, wouldn't it be nice if people were to understand that and go, okay, sorry, you can have standard again? Or do you think that people are so stupid that they will be like, no, we want modern?
People are stupid.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, is that people are stupid.
I'm actually going to, so to make sure I understand this correctly, all of the new fancy rotation stuff doesn't go into effect until after next year anyway, so how is that relevant?
Well, they were just setting it up.
But I mean, like, it's still not relevant.
That was next year.
Yeah.
Balls.
So
now
this is the problem with us getting all this information so far ahead of schedule, is that my brain does not understand time.
And here's the other thing.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Bill.
What if they had told us about the new rotation schedule at the same time as telling us that all of the Pro Tours would be standard? Wouldn't that have been great? And we all would have gone, oh, that makes perfect sense. It's not that you hate modern. It's that this makes sense.
Although, eventually someone like Bill would have pointed out, but that's not relevant until next year, so we want modern.
Yeah, so let's talk about, since we now know what it will be, and we know what it is right now, let's talk about what it's going to be next year during the weirdness. So, Cons of Tarkir is going to drop next month, right? It's like the end of next month we get Cons.
Right.
So Cons of Tarkir drops next month, and when Cons hits, we lose Return to Ravnica, and we lose Corset 2014. Those are gone. Forget about them. They're dead to you. Then we're going to have...
More than you ever know.
Then we're going to have...
Louis.
Cons, and then Louis, and then Dewey, right? Louis, and then Dewey. And then we're going to have another core set, the last core set. And then when the next set comes out after that core set, which is going to be Blood, so fall of 2015 we'll have Blood. When fall of 2015 hits, we're going to go ahead and lose Theros Block and lose core set 2015.
Right.
Then Sweat will drop and everything's fine. But then Tears comes out. And when Tears comes out in early 2016, I think is when Tears will come out.
Yes.
When Tears comes out, something weird happens. and we're going to lose Khans of Tarkir and Dewey, but not Louis. So one third of the Khans block will still be legal.
Now, Rosewater assures us that this will make sense when we see what they've done with the what's the word I'm looking for? The form factor. No,
the format?
The structure of the Khans of Tarkir block, because remember, it's going to be Khans is a big set, and then the middle one is what's the middle one?
Dewey.
Dewey is the little set. I wish they'd go ahead and tell us that it's Warlord so we can quit calling it freaking Dewey.
That'd be nice.
And oh, PAX is next week. Cool.
Yep.
And
give it a week, the problem goes away.
And then Louis is another big set. And remember, the way they're being drafted is we draft Khans by itself, then we draft Dewey with Khans, and then we draft Dewey with Louis. But Louis and Khans don't go together. So this will all make sense, and we won't have to go, oh God, how am I going to remember this, when they show us all the rest of this stuff. So everybody freaking out. Oh, we're going to shut up. Trust in Wizards. They
You're
do stuff
draft
like
the
this.
Packs they put in front of you, you'll be fine.
Well, not just drafting. I'm talking about standard. But Louis will be different enough to where you won't even think about it, I'm guessing.
That's what they're saying. Here's the Cliff Notes version to next year's rotations. Okay.
TLDR.
When the TLDR. When Blood comes out, we rotate as normal. When Tears comes out, the two oldest sets go away. And then from then on, just whenever a new block hits, get rid of the two oldest sets.
Pretty much, yeah.
Ta-da.
So Louis and the Corset will just pretend to be a two-set block.
Briefly.
For all intents and purposes, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And there you go. Okay, so those are the changes. And as we've already said, strangely enough, on the social medias, pretty much as everyone is okay with this.
Well, let's look at this from a practical perspective.
Sure.
Dropping the core set, nobody's really going to care for the assorted reasons we already listed. Okay.
Sadly,
except for a very niche subset of people. For standard rotating on a shorter timeline, I don't actually think that is going to be as bad as people are making it out to be, because even smaller subset of the Magic community is already crying foul because, oh, my card price is going to fluctuate all over the board. How am I going to play the stock market now? Herp-a-derp-a-derp-a-derp. No.
Now, they are probably right, but I don't care.
Well, I think they're only right to a certain extent. Bear in mind that the only reason that card prices do what they do is because of market forces. And, well, and maybe price manipulation by some of the big shops if you believe those sorts of conspiracies. But still.
Which is why we have to travel to the plain of Virginia and just heard that, wait, what?
If people know that cards are going to rotate quickly, their prices won't stay as high, right?
Precisely.
I mean, the same thing that's going to want you to sell your cards is going to bring card prices, is going to keep them in check.
Go ahead, Bill.
Well, the only reason I'm hesitant about that is because core set only lasts 15 months. Any given core set only lasts 15 months, and core sets still get some money cards.
Do they?
I mean, yeah, they do.
Really?
Yeah, really, they do.
Well, I'm waiting for an example here.
Oh, you actually want examples of money core set cards?
Planeswalkers.
I'm afraid I do.
Well, I mean, aside from planes.
Such as? Yeah.
Planeswalkers.
Give me, have you looked at the Planeswalkers from this set and their prices?
Yes, they're Planeswalker prices.
Yeah, they're not great.
The prices right now don't matter either way because we don't know what they're actually going to be doing in a block. But
exactly.
I'm actually more referring to the fact that the core set was for a while where we got our lands that we needed. And
okay, that I think is a very valid concern.
That's going to matter. But aside from that, it's also just a matter of when you look at like the small sets, like for instance, Dragon's Maze had exactly one card that people cared about. So it was a little bit underdrafted, but it was only drafted for 3 months.
Hell yeah, Maze's End.
Yeah, exactly. It was only drafted for a few months, and we all knew that it would have a very short shelf life because it was exactly the amount of time that we're talking about here. It's a year and a half. And as a result, what few cards were good in it were not opened in a lot of drafts and were really expensive. My real concern with this one is for the small sets, but also for the fact that, you know, if each of these is its own setting and its own plane, we're probably not going to see as much of the generic repeatable things like the Buddy Lands, because they're going to want to tie them into flavor and they're going to want you to buy a bunch of new ones. And
God, I hope not. Like, I know that they will, and there's the hoping is against hope. I really hope they don't just use this as a way to fleece people.
I mean, I'm not saying they will, but I think it's something that can happen now.
And probably will.
Now, they're also going to have a lot more leeway to take risks, right? because, you know, one of the things that they tried to do in expansion sets is, you know, sure, they would print powerful and interesting cards, but they didn't want to do anything too crazy because that set's going to be around for 2 years.
And now it's around for a year and a half.
Now it's around for a year and a half. Or if it's the small set, it's even shorter than that, right? It's
like 15 months. Yeah, it's around for 15 months and it's going to affect 3 blocks. I mean, it's not that different than printing something really powerful in a core set or the small set, the third set, the one that we had all these problems with before. I mean, Bloodbraid Elf was only around for a year and a half too.
Well, something I would kind of like to add in here, from the standard perspective, you know, card prices and all that aside, I consider myself a very average FNM kind of standard player. I do Fat Pack Hero and I go do standard for 5 weeks at a time every couple of months. Okay. And the way standard is right now, and the way I set my project up, regardless of what deck I end up coming up with by the end of the project's completion, I always know what I'm going to see in the room, usually because like there's the length of time given in the standard right now. And with the card pool, what you have is people who jump on cards that they know are going to be quality and have a lot of accessibility into several different decks, and they stick with those decks. Like right now, my meta is nothing but mono color. All right. It's mono green. It's mono blue. It's mono black. And then the one guy who took the blue white deck from the Pro Tour. And that is incredibly boring. Given the stretch of time I have between when I start up the Fat Pack Hero seasons and things like that, it's going to be nice now when I go to my store and I see different decks around and I see people with different ideas and things like that being tossed around. And standard is going to, I think, figuratively, and effectively be a little bit bigger, unless I'm thinking something wrong here. Please somebody correct me if I am. And having access to more options within the card pool, it's not going to just help out average players like me. It's going to help out the veterans and the people who are vetted into standard, like a lot of people at your FNM can be. Now, the darker side of this is, you know, alongside being a average quote-unquote FNM player, I'm also a dad, and I work for a living. And like a lot of people, I don't have time to make it out to FNM as often as I want to. And sometimes I don't know what's legal in standard. Fat Pack Hero actually started last week, and I thought Attacar Waste was legal, okay? And though it wasn't an issue all night long, I didn't know until I was looking today that Attacar Waste was actually not legal. And that is going to be a thing that happens, I think, with more frequency as sets start rotating quicker and things like that. And for the card prices fluctuating, you know, I'm of the opinion that, you know, what if we do have these cards that just suddenly rocket up in price? That's still going to be a barrier of entry for some people into the format who are serious about competing in it. And you're going to have these wildly fluctuating secondary market prices. And granted, there's nothing WotC can do about that, but that's going to be a real thing there too. While I'm very positive about these changes, I do have some concern, and I think those are very valid. And, as far as the storytelling perspective goes, it's kind of like we were talking about earlier, you know, look, we're going to be going to a lot more planes. We're going to see a lot more generic fantasy characters. We're going to see a lot more legendaries and planeswalkers and stuff like that. But does it really matter from a flavor perspective? I know that sounds really horrible and barbaric, and that's probably not the thing a lot of Orthosis want to hear right now, but it's the truth. I mean, I don't know many players that you meet in your local game store where flavor ever mattered enough to them for them to care. A lot of people you're going to meet at your LGS, except for maybe that one rare guy, they're not going to care that we're on a different plane. They're not going to care that we're doing this or that, so long as the mechanics are decent and the gaming still plays like magic.
Yeah, the FNM player, to me, just from my experience with the local people here, is they're mostly the Melvin characters. You know, they care more that this is a 2-2 for 2, not that this is a bear.
Well,
now,
that's
making a generalization, but as far as people getting cards to play in standard, yeah, flavor literally does not matter.
So I'll make the following statements. Jack, I think you do have some very valid concerns, particularly on the more rapid changes are actually a double-edged sword. It means that
yes,
standard doesn't get stagnant as quickly, but it means that standard is changing more quickly, which in the end may cause, if not pricing out of the business for some people, a fatigue. Just that merry-go-round is going to be that much more intense, quite frankly. But on the subject of flavor, I am of the opinion that flavor only ever adds to the experience, that flavor never subtracts from the experience, because you're absolutely right. There is a huge group of players who do not care about flavor at all, but because the flavor is there doesn't mean that they enjoy what they're doing less. It's still a 2-2 for 2, and they're perfectly happy with that.
Exactly, yeah.
But
to those people, like the people who just want to get the good cards and play them in Standard, flavor is literally just some stuff that's tacked on that if they're bored, they'll read it. Or they could be all about the flavor, but if they're playing in Standard, chances are they don't let it affect them, unlike Clues. So you're known to be a slave to theme. I've heard you admit it several times.
Yeah. But his themes are so awesome.
Well, they really are. But I'm just
like the Rat deck. Anyways.
Yeah, I'm just saying that in Standard itself, the flavor doesn't matter. For people like me who have to talk about this sort of thing, oh, it's going to be great. Not because of the Standard part, but because of the stories and new worlds and new mechanics and new things to talk about.
And see, I think that's also kind of a dual-edged sword too, if we're talking about world building, because while we are going to have a much faster deadline, you know, Clues, you're right. People are going to get tired, and it's not just going to be the players or the designers. It's going to be the flavor guys. It's going to be the artists. It's going to be the countless people that do try to make Magic be more than these generic 2/2s that we play with. And I question, the creative department's capacity to crank out world after world after world after world every year and still care. Because, despite how lengthy a timeline we have between blocks now, like when I am actually looking at the flavor of a particular plane, like they go deep in it. That's like, did you guys ever get the Planeswalker's Guide to Alara when it came out?
I've seen it.
I didn't, but I read a lot of the stuff that they posted to the website about it.
Yeah, dude, it was amazing. Like, it went through all the different, like, tiers of necromancers on Grixis and all this other stuff, and it was very fleshed out, and while it wasn't necessarily, like, the most creative idea ever, it still felt like when I was sitting down and I was looking at Alara cards, I was like, yeah, I know how you got those seagulls. Like, yeah, I know what a fleshbag marauder is now, you know, and all this other stuff. And so I think from a flavor perspective, there is going to be this concern of, you know, how often can you really reinvent the wheel?
And my thinking on that is that this is not announced anywhere, and I'm saying this based purely on speculation. But I think what we're ultimately going to fall into is a cycle where, like, in the fall, we'll get a new plane, and in the spring, we'll revisit an old one. I think that could actually just be what happens, so that they're not constantly building new planes and they get a chance to revisit things that work. There are enough planes in the multiverse at this point between the ones we've been to and the ones that we've hinted at that they could fall into that cycle and it would work pretty well. And it would also allow them to actually have these running plot lines where for the people who really care about the plot, they show up especially hard in the spring. And for the people who are like, ooh, I want to go to the plane that's inspired by Aztec architecture, they go in the fall. It'd be a really easy thing for them to do. But again, no one said that. I just think that could very easily happen if this works.
And at the rate, with the number of planes that we have right now, and at the rate that happens, we could run out in approximately like 18 years. Like, anyone who's thinking, well, it's going to get old going back to play, no. Because there's a lot. And it's only 2 new locations a year. We have to remember that. A year. A year's a long time. Unless you're a piece of rock.
Depends on the rock.
Well, okay.
Depends on the weathering near the rock, actually.
But yeah, a year is a long time. And, you know, in particular, I'd really like to know. So, like, I don't know, 2 years ago, I had seen a statistic that the average playing lifetime of a Magic player was something like 6 years before they, you know, from the time they started till the time they left the game, the average was like 6 years. Now, there are anomalies, and there are people who have gone and come back. I'd really like to know what those numbers are like now.
I'd also like to know how they get those numbers.
My guess would be DCI.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can actually do it off the DCI numbers. I mean, I can't.
Mind you, that's not
going to
tell you who's playing at
statistics.
Home. It's just going to tell you who actually show up for events.
Yeah.
Okay. That is the hard thing.
The best one. But.
And, you know, that's something that we lose track of here on this show, but they certainly don't lose track of on other shows hosted by people who are also on this podcast, like, I don't know, The Manipool.
Hi.
Manipool.
At The Manipool on Twitter.
We've got to recognize and be honest with ourselves. Although we talk about tournament play, and we talk about high-level tournament play on this show, most of the customers of Magic are not those players. Most of them are your kitchen table folks, just by sheer numbers.
We are definitely a silent majority.
Yeah. And so the question is, how will any of this affect those players? It won't. They'll just get new cool things. That's fine for them. They don't care about standard. They don't care about rotation.
And that's all they were getting in before, was new cool things.
And
it
so
just, it was three sets worth and then a core set. So now it'll just be two different sets worth of cool, or blocks worth of cool stuff, whatever.
That's right. They'll get more cool stuff in the end. And, you know, I think another nice thing is, if there is a block that you just hate, if they have a Scars of Mirrodin 2 infect harder, I only have to ignore it for two sets.
Don't worry, Clues. Don't worry. They made an entire year event out of Bruce getting Willis rid of Mirrodin. It's gone. Mirrodin is dead. Long live Mirrodin.
Oh, that reminds me. Something Jack said earlier about Standard. Standard will actually be smaller. Right now, Standard goes from 5...
Yeah, I realized I was being dumb.
Well, no, wait a minute. Right now, I want to explain this. Right now, Standard goes from 5 sets up to 8, and then back to 5. Now, Standard will go from 5 sets to 6, and then back to 5.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Standard will actually be much smaller, but not so small, hopefully, as to fall into the block constructed trap where there's one good deck and everything else sucks. I really hate block constructed.
Yeah, well, since there won't be a core set to take up all the nice cards that make block constructed bad, I think we'll be okay there. A lot of the reason block constructed sucks is because they put the staples for the set in the core set. And you have no wrath, and then you get overrun by tokens.
Yeah, although if we could return to an earlier comment, I am worried about the mana base.
Yes. Right?
That's my biggest concern.
The core set was a safety valve where they could print the mana fixing and the lands, the utility lands that you needed to make things go.
Like the enemy colored pain lands, maybe?
For instance.
Let's say.
It's also the place where you can reprint lands without having to go to Ravnica.
Yeah.
Although, they could have reprinted the Shocklands at any point, because all of those are named and flavored in such a way they're completely generic.
Yep. They make more sense in the context of Ravnica, but they are generic enough.
Only slightly. Like, why can't Theros have a Hallowed Fountain?
Well, no, I'm just saying, because of their heavy guild influence, just those color pairings, they make so much logical sense in Ravnica.
I'm not saying easily extracted without too much trouble.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying you can't reprint them other places. I'm just saying they fit better in Ravnica than anywhere else.
Yeah.
I'm going to disagree with that. The only reason they fit better in Ravnica is because that's where they've always been.
Well, it's by definition what Ravnica is.
All dual-colored lands are by definition what Ravnica is, Clues. The Buddy lands would have fit perfectly in Ravnica because they're two-colored lands.
That doesn't negate my argument.
Lord. But... yeah, this is a problem. Like, they gave us the enemy color dual lands right before we hit a wedge-based block, or set, rather, a wedge-based set, which is gonna help mana bases there a lot. Because, you know, it's the one color, and it's his two enemies. So, and they could just reprint them in the core set and not care. Like, here you go. And that's gonna smooth things out a lot once cons drops. So, especially since we're losing, the Ravnica Perfect Guild lands. So, yeah. And they're not going to be able to do that anymore without doing some maneuvering.
I mean, they're going to have to set themselves up in a situation where they're going to have to devote card slots within sets to cycles of lands, or we're just going to have to learn how to not have those, which would be an experience in and of itself. I mean, they could skip a set, and if they only did them in every other set, they would always be in standard.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, there are options here, and I'm sure they've thought about it. I mean, they've been thinking about this for a long time. We've known about it for about 12 hours. So I'm pretty confident that they have solutions for these. These are just things that we see and worry about because, honestly, I have bought so many cycles of lands over the years that the idea of doing that every 6 months is pretty miserable if they don't start doing some reprints. So we'll see what they do.
Yeah. So notice we are still, on the most part, overwhelmingly positive. We are just cautiously optimistic. Like, we have concerns. I also trust in Wizards to not, you know, screw everything up and kill the game.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if the hive mind on the whole doesn't think that the game is dead, then that means the game is surely going to die. No, then that means that they're probably doing something right.
Even, we are running the asylum.
Even Dr. Jeebus, God rest him, but he loves to complain about things, was like, I don't see a problem. And I was like, "Yeah."
And chiming in from personal experience and interaction with Jeebs, and I know nobody else on this podcast is going to agree with me. Jeebs is probably the closest thing we have to somebody that's a member of R&D while not being a member of R&D. He's very, very intelligent when it comes to making both business decisions regarding how the game flows and what's a good idea and what's a bad idea for how it flows. And he's also really good at, you know, how format should function and things like that. Jeebs is very, very smart when it comes to things like this. And the fact that he was not excited made me feel better about my own non-excitement towards it as well. And look, I'm going to put it like this. The game has been around for 20 years. I literally cannot think of a single card game that even, or even like a pop culture game that comes anywhere near as close to having both the vitality and the lifespan that Magic does. And this game has gone through some dark ages, some of them more recent than others, but yet we still move and we're growing. We're always growing, and it's all directly because of a lot of the things R&D has decided to do, both marketing wise and with the game over the last 5 years. And so with that said, I have full faith in this. I mean, I think we all have our concerns, and they're very rightfully so. But they've not done anything just yet that has just straight up made me say I'm selling my collection. So I have faith that what they're doing is correct.
Yeah, contrary to popular belief, WotC has no vested interest in killing this game.
I hear profits are good. Like, I hear making profit is really good for a business.
I mean, I guess if you have goals, like having a business tomorrow, maybe.
Yeah, whatever.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not too worried about any of that stuff. I'm sure it'll be fine. They've got plenty of people thinking about it. Honestly, I am happy that the transition to very short blocks means we can probably actually see double face cards again. Because there's a lot of mechanics that they don't have enough design space to do three sets of, but I'm pretty sure they can get 1.5.
Come on, tribal.
That's not happening.
No, do you mean tribal the card type or tribal?
Yes.
Just tribal.
Tribal the card type.
Yeah, you're not getting that.
Come on, Metalcraft. Shroom needs some new toys.
Oh, Jesus. So this episode has officially gone off the rails, and it's almost midnight, so I'm going to call it.
Great.
That's appropriate.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. My old man is going to knock on my door at approximately 8 o'clock in the morning, so I should probably go to sleep.
Probably.
So, I guess, what you guys got? Let's do some wrapping up here. Clues, what you got?
All right, well, you can find me most weeks on the Card Advantage podcast right here on the MTGCast network. Listen to it. The archive's pretty good, or so Chewy tells me. So that's cool. I'm going to be at PAX this coming week, so if you're at PAX, I'd say come find me. I'll be, quote, at PAX, unquote. I know it's a big place, but still, that's the way it is. Because of travel plans, I will not be here on Monday Night Magic next week unless we record on Tuesday, because...
We will hold
Monday.
The bow tie in your honor,
which,
sir.
Which is entirely possible, given that it's us.
Yeah, it's possible, but we'll see.
It depends
anyway.
On, since you're going to be there and Bill's going to be there, it depends on how the two of you are, because we can't do it without both of you. That would suck.
I mean, I'm driving back on Monday. You'll get what's left of me after Dragon Con. Yeah, that could be funny or terrible.
So, warning listeners, next week's episode might be a day late, but it won't be as bad as last week's, which I didn't get up till, what, Thursday? Due to various issues?
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Anyway, I also want to plug my local card shop. That would be Atomic Empire in Durham, North Carolina. It's a great shop. You should check it out. I think that's everything I've got. Go to GP Orlando. I'll be there, too.
And that's in October?
That is in October. I want to say it's October 3rd and 4th, something like that.
Okay. All right, Jack, what you got?
Well, as always, ladies and gentlemen, if you dare to reach me for any reason whatsoever, you can hit me up on Twitter at Jack LaCroix. You can reach me through email, which is probably not the best for correspondence. I'm really bad at responding to emails that are really, really good and have great conversation here lately. At jackandmtgcast.com. You can always send me tons of anonymous messages, specifically on Tuesday at jackfromnc.tumblr.com/ask.
Not safe for work.
Not safe for work to the moon and back. And as always, if you want to read some great Magic the Gathering content that is both highly creative and attuned to the writer's very personality, if you will, you can always check out mtgbrodeals.com. We had a great article up today called the 10 Commandments of Heliod by a guy named Heavy Meta Midget. And it was good. Oh, also, before we leave here, a big shout out to Steve and Not So Silent Bob on Twitter, who before we started recording tonight wanted to let me know that They actually play Eminem over the over their stereo in the factory he works in on his iPod. So, Not So Silent Bob and all the people you work with, have a great freaking work day.
Hey guys, how you doing?
It's like they can hear us or something.
I know, it's crazy.
Don't do that with your hand on the drill press. Trust me, the piercing is not going to look nearly as good as you want it to.
Shake hands with danger.
Just remember, guys, when operating machinery, bow ties are superior to normal ties in every way.
And Clues is not wrong.
Spoken like a man who hasn't cut his own head off. Good job, Clues.
That's right.
All right. Bill, what you got?
All right, I'm going to go down my list here. So you can find me on Twitter at SqueeGoblinAbob, no I in Goblin, because I wore the wrong tie. You can find me in person next weekend at Dragon Con. I will be somewhere. Message me on Twitter at the aforementioned name, and we can trade friend codes and use apps and all kinds of stuff in Atlanta, and then we can be the two people drinking Pepsi because it drives them nuts. And then on top of that, if you're in my area, like the Raleigh-Durham area, next weekend, and you want to go to a more local thing, some of my friends from back when I worked with Anime Cons are putting on an event called Cosplay America, which is in Cary. You can learn about that at cosplayamerica.com. That's really local. And then if you stick around a week, then you can hunt down Chewy at Tilt Expo, which I'll let him talk about.
Yeah. Are you done?
Yeah.
Okay, then. Well, I will be at Tilt Expo. I'll be doing a general podcasting panel with myself and Kelly Hightower from the Mating Habits of the Modern Geek podcast, and apparently some mystery third person. I will be doing, hopefully, I still haven't gotten confirmation on this, a magic panel about magic. Probably the three or four of us talked about it, actually, after recording one night, and I think we're going to do something about maybe getting into magic or something. We'll work on that. And I might be in on a panel that is comparing Hearthstone and magic as well, because while I don't play Hearthstone, I know all the people that do. For some reason. I have tapped both, again, this hasn't been confirmed that this is gonna happen, but hopefully I've tapped both Mike and Brian from the Mana Pool, who have been playing Magic for a very long time and have very good sensibilities. Mike is a player and rules guy and flavor guy, and Brian is a player and deck builder and, designer type person. And they both play Hearthstone, as well as former Monday Night Magic co-host Squanto, who is now streaming Hearthstone on Twitch as Excel, E-C-K-S-E-L-L. So he played Magic back in the day, now he's playing Hearthstone. And so yeah, I'm going to try to get them and hopefully someone else in on a Hearthstone slash Magic, how can they coexist and learn from each other and all that type of panel. If you're interested in that, all this will be going on at the Tilt Expo. Did I say former Monday Night Magic host Squanto? Because I meant to say the Mana Pool.
That is now clarified. Yay.
Okay, good. You could have said that out loud. And there will be the big M15 sealed tournament with the ridiculous prizes like an iPad mini and From the Vault Annihilation and a 3DS and stuff like that. There will be Red Bull will be there passing out for Red Bull. There will be the gaming places and the console gaming places. And Movie Bob from The Escapist will be there. It's just all kinds of stuff. Humans versus Zombies, the Geek Speed Dating. All kinds of stuff. If you're anywhere near Durham, North Carolina, the weekend after Labor Day, so that is the 5th through the 7th of September, then you should totally show up, attend the panels, play some magic, check out all the stuff. It's going to be cool. It's going to be cool. I found out that the speed dating is happening not at the beginning, but during the magic tournament, and that makes me sad.
Wait, oh. What now?
The speed dating.
Oh, like they're scheduled at the same time. They're not a simul event.
No. So, oh, yeah, the okay, Magic Tournament.
Okay. So we're drafting in a whole new way.
The Magic,
yeah,
Tilt Expo. The Magic Tournament starts at noon, and I think speed dating starts at 3, although I could be wrong about that.
I believe that is the case.
That sucks. I might have to bail on the Magic Tournament to jump in on the speed dating, because it sounds seriously like a trip. So if you ever want to have a 3-minute or however long those dates are with me, you know, look me up.
Should have backed the Kickstarter.
I will sign your boob.
It was a stretch goal.
It was not a stretch goal. Don't listen to Clues. So with all that, it's in Durham, North Carolina. Look it up on tiltexpo.com. And with all that, you can find me at the Mana Pool on Twitter. Send me an email to Chewy, that's C-H-E-W-I-E at mtgcast.com. And generally say hi. Let me know what's up. Hopefully we didn't bore you guys to death with all of our massive overanalyzation of the big announcement, but that's what all the podcasts are going to be for the next week or two, so...
It's Marta's fault for hyping it.
Yeah, watch out for him. So, okay. So with that, thank you guys very much for joining me, as always. And listeners, thank you all so very much for listening, and go play some magic.
And R&D, thank you so much for changing things up, and go kill magic.